Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 481.
I've got a great idea. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, Terry.
This if it's an original idea of yours, I don't know how I would sign up.
I don't know if anyone's ever done this before.
Mm.
I'm thinking, get a box.
Put
random stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Sell it to somebody.
No way.
Yeah.
How much could I pay you for that?
I mean, how much are you willing to pay me for?
Well, I mean, you'd put nothing but goodies in it?
Sure, yeah, that's it.
Like all your best goodies that you have,
yeah,
that are just lying around, and you know they're appreciating in value, so you figure. Yeah.
I mean, I need to get these to the people.
Yeah. It's your best way to do it.
I miss Tyler Brickley right now because I literally thought of this like two nights ago when I was laying in bed. I was thinking of you, Tyler.
Yes.
I want to do a video of like you and I doing a mystery box, but it's you kind of trying to sell it, and it's me in the background just putting the most random bullshit in, like a pile of leaves, like cool, trying to like shove our kids into this box or just anything. Just put anything into this dumb box, me in my garage, like there's like wood, chunks of wood, like order our mystery boxes. Be sure to get the newest, you know, just the worst things. Because to me, that's something Tyler would do. He would do it really well. We'd do it half-assed.
Yeah.
He would do it really well.
We miss that guy. In a tangent to that, before we get to our featured guest tonight, I had expressed a little frustration. I know this is old man, get off my lawn kind of stuff, but I am already way sick of the pre-post
Black Friday sales.
Like, okay, I love that
it's all advertising it.
We're no longer losing our minds and like trampling on people in a store, and everything's online. I get all that.
But give me
now,
some time.
It's Black Friday month. It's the whole damn month. We're just going to have a sale. We started it already. And I'm picking on all of you manufacturers. I'm not picking on just one. This is almost all the retailers, many of which I love.
Are you sure?
But I mean, I'm annoyed.
We're about to have one on as our guest.
All right. He's maybe at the helm. He's maybe help orchestrate some of this. None other than Miles Parkhill from Paragon Disc Golf joining us. Miles, you guys got any good deals?
You got any mystery boxes for me?
Actually, what is the most money that you would pay for a mystery box? Because I see this like in other like
$40.
No, like I want somebody to call me and say, I want like a $2,000 mystery box.
Damn.
Oh.
And
I
mean, literally,
no, I told you my answer. My answer is $40. It's the most I'd pay for a mystery box.
Okay. Ask the Smashies what's the most they'd pay, and let's put together a wild mystery box. And whoever this person is needs to like video it, opening it.
Yeah.
Put some pretty cool stuff in a box.
Well, and that's just the next question. And I think here's why mystery boxes obviously have been very big in disc golf. I've offered up a few throughout the last decade. I get it. They've become very popular in a lot of ways. The biggest problem with them is people forget there's a an inherent lottery component to it to some degree, right? Like, not every mystery. I worry that so many people feel like, I buy a $50 mystery box, and if it's not worth $200, then you're disappointed and you got ripped off.
The only
it
way,
might be worth 50 or 55 or 60, but if it's not worth 200, that's where I get pissed off, and then I start rage tweeting.
Well,
that's what they do. Not
to me, me personally, I would only buy a mystery box if there is, in disc golf terms, a chance for a new disc. Like, let's just say Disc Mania is, this is where you drop a new disc. This is where you drop, a cool Kyle Klein super gold on gold foil with, actual Kyle Klein DNA in it or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Gets but, weird, but yeah.
Whatever. I'm not judging. You put, a handful of those in boxes and you send them out. And it's a lottery. Cool. One of these people are getting. But you have to know, to me, I have to know there's a chance I get that. It can't just be, hey, here's a $40 mystery box. Maybe you get a cool disc. And I don't know what that cool disc is. To me, a mystery box should be something where I have a... It's almost like a scratch-off to me. That's what a mystery box should be. Like, I know I have a chance to win $500 with a scratch-off. Am I gonna? Let's be honest. No one.
You still usually get something, that you can throw or just put in a pile or donate to your club or whatever you want to do. Yeah.
And that's good. And I love that. I've got plenty... For me, though, I have plenty of discs. I don't need... I'm very blessed in the number of discs I have. From a lot of them are totally worthless, and I would love to mystery box them to somebody who wants a bunch of
Johnny V's old
stuff.
Who wants
2002 beat up Eagles?
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
DX
Eagles.
I've got somebody.
So Miles, it's been a minute since you've been on the show. We take you for granted because you do so much work behind the scenes, and you're one of the guys that keeps things moving, and a lot of the disc golf community doesn't necessarily always know, recognize, and or know what's going on out there.
So I'm okay with that.
Now we're here to blow you up, man. So tell the world, give the world your 60-second elevator pitch as to what you and your companies do.
Started Paragon because our club got the most terrible shirts one year. And I thought if this happened to our club, it's probably happening to other clubs. So I really started focusing on selling to clubs and helping them out, raise money for courses, signs, events. And then obviously as, I started working with Steve Dodge, and that's how actually I met you, Terry, was at Maple Hill, and then just made all these connections and worked with everybody and started working with the Pro Tour and, just help everybody grow. We all have grown together and it's been really cool. But yeah, pretty much anything anybody needs with a logo on it, I can do it. If I can't, I usually tell you where you can get it done. So,
and again, your specialty, because even before Paragon was a full-blown disc golf solution, Miles t-shirts is what you were hosting and
started that providing in high school in 99.
You were in high school in 99? Jeez, let's talk about that. No, I'm just kidding.
So, t-shirts, and then just for a moment, for you, what has been... Now, let me set this up for everyone. Like you said, imprinting, promotional products, some are like your standard ones that you'd expect to see every day, and then you have all sorts of unique things that you've helped with. A lot of the stands that get built underneath baskets, things of that nature. You guys have really expanded, helping build the Zuka Trust that we see on the Pro Tour, things of that nature. My question for you, though, is what has been the most exciting advancement in your industry for you in the last couple of decades? What's been just this insane game changer for you in terms of doing your job and providing your service better?
I think for us, obviously automatic presses, when I started out printing manual, just, one shirt at a time, maybe 100 an hour if I'm lucky. And now we have two automatic presses. We're actually installing a third one in December. And it definitely helps us get shirts done quicker for people like Terry, who literally approved a design this morning. We printed the order and shipped it to him today. He will have it tomorrow.
Finally.
Nobody else do that, please. But that's pretty much Terry's MO.
That's Terry's MO, yeah. I mean, you could ask any disc manufacturer almost or any – vendor he's ever worked with, and they'll say, who cuts it the closest? Terry Miller cuts it the closest.
There's definitely a lot of people that do. So it's nice to be able to knock stuff out quickly for people when it's needed. I love the people that plan ahead too.
To be fair, Miles and I talked a month ago or longer.
But you just didn't get him
talking
the
talking is not an order. I mean,
well,
you text me like Friday, you're like, did you order the shirts? I'm like, do we even have a design?
I gave you the order last week, Monday. We don't have to get into all of this here, Miles. Come on. Here's what I like to do for you. Because I'm so close, I like to make sure that you're getting your other orders that have longer shipping times. Yeah. So because I'm close to you, I'm just helping you with your inventory.
It's probably like the busiest week of shipping ever for UPS, is my guess. Well, next week probably is really, but.
At one point, the USPS used to say like tomorrow, Wednesday, was like the number one day for Christmas cards or holiday cards or something that. I feel like that was
really before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I feel like that's the number one, used to be like one of the number one busiest ship. I know one of the number one travel days in the world.
Yeah, it's number two. Because for me, I think like families, our family would always get together on Thanksgiving, take a nice picture, and then you make your card out of that and it gets sent out in mid-December, early to mid-December. I mean, it's possible. I'm not denying that as far as those are Christmas cards. Shipping could be completely different.
It is saying that December 14th is the busiest mailing day. Maybe I was thinking of the travel day tomorrow. Probably. Either way, lots of people on the move. And if that means UPS or FedEx trucks out on the road as well, everybody will be moving tomorrow. So, the idea of the presses, of course, being automated. I think back to early bag tags, like very early bag tags. Like,
I could go get
like,
some.
Like the year 2000 bag tags, right? And it was so difficult to find because you could come up with a design, but individualizing them, having them sequentially numbered was always the number one problem. You could call up every disc manufacturer, all like three at the time, and they would make you minis, but to have an individual number on each one was like a whole nother, not really doable process. Things like that, I have to say, have just come light years, have they not?
No, absolutely. And artwork, I mean, more and more people have, vector files, mainly because they're using for disc stamps. So then they send it to us and we can put it on a bag tag for them and then translate it to a shirt or banners or anything. But yeah, the accessibility to better quality artwork, I think, has been a huge advancement. Not everyone is stealing the DGA basket off of Google anymore. I mean, that pretty much was like the go-to for the longest time for a club logo was, hey, disc golf basket, hey, DGA, here we go. Mm-hmm. I have to kindly tell people, sorry, you can't use that logo.
Yeah, that kind of leads to an interesting question within our entire disc golf field and commerce, which is disc manufacturers, when it comes to hot stamping, yourself, when it comes to making club-related merchandise or doing anything that, you're imprinting, where do those conversations, how do those usually go when, and where's the liability in terms of you recognizing or seeing something that maybe has a trademark or a copyright? Like, how do you handle those situations?
Yeah, I mean, I think DGA, I've probably done it the most because that's the one that probably gets stolen the most. But yeah, typically I'll just tell them nicely, hey, let me create something different for you. And we have probably over 500 different basket designs now that we've created. And most people are cool about it. Some people get really aggressive. At one point, I had a really good voicemail from a guy that said he actually made that DGA logo, like before DGA even started or something.
Oh, perfect.
Before DGA started
the sport.
Yeah, right. No, it was pretty good. The guy was very passionate about his logo, but it really wasn't his. But yeah, sometimes I'll, just send a little email to DGA and they'll ask people really nicely. Most people, I think, understand. They just don't know. They're like, well, if I just change it a little bit, is it going to be okay? It's like, no, it's still the same logo. I'm actually surprised there's not more lawsuits and people suing people and more cease and desist than there are in the sport with as many ripoff bootleg things there are.
Well, I'll follow that up with how does disc golf specifically maybe compare with some of the other you know, organizations or sports that you often print for? Like, are we right on par, so to speak, with?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, I actually did get a cease and desist from an independent truck company, which is like a skateboard company.
Yep.
There's a club in Independence, Missouri, and they had the Iron Cross, and it just said Independence Disc Golf, and it had the Iron Cross, and they were all over me, you know, within 45 minutes of me posting it on Instagram. So that was interesting. But, you know, it's really one of those things. Hey, you need to take it down. How many did you make? How many did you sell? How much money did you make? You know, we're talking 20 bag tags that we sold for $2 a piece or something. So there's not a whole lot of money involved, but, you know, you live and you learn.
And there's got to be times that you don't even maybe even realize things are. I mean, there's a billion logos out there. You don't know every one.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And
yeah,
just.
Well, I mean, even, you know, there's plenty of these pros logos that people compare. You know, I see a lot of people that compare like Big Beth's logo to other things, but they're all in different sports and nobody knew that they were.
Oh, excuse me.
You know, and their stuff, it just looks close, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
In the last couple of years, there's been an added layer of, I'm going to call it legitimacy because that's exactly what it is. We've seen the likes of Discraft and Disney. We've seen Dynamic and Marvel. We've seen more recently
Discmania and the Grateful Dead.
Yep. And then also Prodigy just recently with the NHL. From your perspective, and clearly this isn't, you know, even meant at any of them in general, but from your perspective, does that add legitimacy to, you know, opportunities within disc golf? Does that say something? Is it something that doesn't excite you, or maybe that does excite you because that's more stuff?
I know plenty of people that are not disc golfers, and let's just use Discraft Star Wars stuff. I mean, I had people reaching out to me because they know I'm a disc golf person, and they're like, oh my God. And, but they're huge Star Wars fans. So, I mean, I think it's a great thing for the sport. I think the NHL thing's super cool, and hopefully other sports are soon to follow.
Yeah, many years ago, I don't know if you ever talked with them. There, I want to say his name was Kevin, and I know somebody up in Massachusetts or that general area can remind me of New England. Did he get the usage of like the Three Stooges? Does this ring a bell, right? Do you know who I'm talking about? He purchased legally the rights to some Three Stooges, like the Three Stooges and then a couple other things that he then, I don't think he did much with it, but what does that typically mean? Educate the world as to if there was a brand or an organization that I really like and wanted to partner with or wanted to be able to use their likeness, what are those conversations kind of like from what you've either heard or experienced?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is obviously you have to be, to even get a hold of some of these people is very difficult. So even getting a hold of the right person, but then you have to have something to give back to them. You know, they don't want to work with somebody that's, you know, working out of their garage or has no reach. So I think that's a thing with disc golf as it grows. More people are seeing it as legitimate and more companies are willing to take that leap of faith and see if it works out. I mean, it's not technically going to hurt them. They're going to make some money. But yeah, it's no conversations that I've really been involved with. So I don't know a whole lot about that. Just kind of hearing from the outside of what other people deal with.
I usually don't like toss around like too many great ideas, but if I were you, I would think like trying to print for like Taylor Swift would be a good idea. Have you thought about that?
Yeah. She had some serious drama this year with her printing.
Really?
If you didn't know.
Yeah, honestly, really bad. I don't think I do.
Yeah. They're printing. Well, Disney took over her printing and it was printed, I think in, I don't know, India or Pakistan or something. They used a water-based, ink that wasn't cured. So these people, they're paying $70 to $100 for a sweatshirt. They would wash it and it would literally wash out. So all these kids using technology get on TikTok and say, call your local print shop and see if they can cure the ink by either putting it through their dryer or using a heat press because they just want to save their $100 hoodie. But I'm pretty sure she sold – I don't even remember the number. I'll probably get it wrong. But I know it was like 125 pallets worth of shirts in 2 days, you know, at $70 to $100 a piece. You can do the math. It's a lot of money. It's in the millions. of merchandise that was poorly done. Oh. And there was a recall. I don't know all the other details, but we definitely saw a lot of that going on in our industry, like people talking about it.
Wow.
Getting all the Swifties calling in.
Yeah, you know what? You don't want them mad at you. That's no, for sure.
You get on their good side.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Let's talk about some of the assets and things that we've seen. And let's be honest, the term assets was not really in disc golf terminology, wasn't really even entered into the conversation until basically the Pro Tour, until basically 2016. And maybe we referred to a few things on the course, but we wouldn't collectively call them assets like we do today. So describe right. what that means, and how, what some of those are, basically.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have our pull koozies, which I think maybe you have the
The patent pending trademark yep. name thing yeah. on. Yep, you know, pull koozies, that yep.
That was something that we created for the PDGA and then ended up doing for the Pro Tour. The elevated baskets, obviously the normal stuff, feather flags, banners, mm-hmm. the A-frames, the OB walls. Basically anything where you can put an ad on the course that hopefully doesn't ever interfere play, which we know that happens sometimes. And that you can hopefully make some money to help add to the payouts or cover your cost of setting them up.
I think it's fair. Some have asked, and obviously it's become such a staple of the tour that we see these, and people like Sean Jack, who we've had on the show, it's his job to go out and then find potential, people to sell these types of things to. A fair question though is when are there too many? What does too many look yeah. like, and who needs to care about that? You know, did the players, does the organization, who needs to care about there being quote unquote too many assets out on the course? What's your take on that?
I think it's getting pretty close. I think it's okay. pretty close to being too much, honestly. But how many companies do we have that are willing to pay that premium? So that's what our sport has always done, is just getting a lot of ads at a lower cost to make that bigger number. But I think as you get some of those LL Beans and bigger companies to pay a higher price tag, hopefully there will be better quality assets and maybe fewer of them, you know?
Yeah, because at some point, if it becomes too many, you just lose. There's no point in having your logo yeah. there if it's one of a million mm-hmm. versus
well,
one
I'm
of
just 10. Wondering when the technology would be good enough. You know, Johnny, you can tell me how easy or hard this would be. What if we just had like green screens all over the place and then the ads could just change for the live, but then for the people in person, it would look silly. But I wonder if you could mm-hmm. do something like that.
I mean, baseball, obviously, as we know, baseball does it behind the batters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all one big green screen.
Football does it on the field, you know, even just yeah. with like the first down and stuff. So
yeah, exactly. And that stuff has to have, most of the time, you have to have a static camera, which our guys are not. You know, they could be standing right. on one side of the player 1 minute, the other side of the player the other minute, in order to kind of make that work as nicely as it could. It could be done really shoddily, but I don't see that as a good solution for somebody. It's probably just easier to have it hard printed on, you know, I'm just talking about those little, you know, triangle stands that stand in front of the tee boxes mm-hmm. right now. But yeah, I mean, you could do it if you told your cameraman, oh, we know on hole three, you have to stand here. You have to put your camera here. You have to point it here. And that's how we're going to get our ad. But for as quickly as we're in and out, it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. For us, at least. Not yet. Again,
yeah.
Maybe once getting stationary cameras, that's a different story.
Yeah, I think the cool thing, though, that this has done is that for other events, they really strive to have that look and feel of a Pro Tour event. So they're trying to buy those assets and sell those assets to make people just have that feeling that their event is special. It's just like when you're a kid and you're playing baseball and you're under the lights and you just feel really special and you feel like a pro athlete, you know, when you're 10. And so, yeah, that's really what everybody's going for, you know.
Which, in all honesty, is damn good for your business, right? Like the fact that you print yeah. these promotional materials and that you're printing these assets that go on the course, and then more and more people want to continue to add these assets. Obviously, that's good for someone like you. Has there been, I guess you just said the pull koozies. Is there been any others that you're particularly fond or proud of that you're like, hey, you know, I'm really glad that we helped make these come into existence? Like was the Zuka Trust, is that a standard trust, or is that something that's
no, kind of I mean, obviously, if the very first year, Steve bought a truss that was meant for an indoor, like, expo kind of event.
Sure.
And literally broke within 5 minutes of him setting it up. But we made it work. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, we rigged something else up. And then the next year is when we finally got the truss that we have now. So it was some stuff that I bought from a company that used to make floats for Disney. Mm-hmm. So it was like all the metal and all the connector pieces. It's like big, like erector set, basically. So I made a lot of things out of it. Like when we had the when we had the festival games, which I wish the festival games just would have came a few years later. It would have done so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
That was when we bring it back.
Yeah.
Cool. Like, and I think one of the coolest ones is the, I don't even know what we called it. Like the tower that had like the five baskets stacked up. And I have a video of Simon pre-MVP, and they were black hole baskets, and he was speed putting on them and made like all five baskets in like 2.5 seconds or something. Mm-hmm. It was cool. And he was throwing MVP putters at that time too. So
a little foreshadowing, huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
What, yeah. MVP will pay for that footage.
Yeah.
Sell it big money.
Quite a time lapse. Quite a time lapse. We've been on or something.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. All right. So I just, your response just conjured up an idea. What if, and clearly this would be some kind of partnership. Is it even remotely conceivably possible that someone in a very tight operation operates the festival games and then quote unquote follows the tour along? Like maybe it's not the tour that's doing them, because we know how stretched and worked and everything else everyone is. One or two people, what would that look like to operate, like a traveling?
Cool. I mean, yeah. I think there's enough people now attending the events that it could make money, but with everything else that people are spending money on, I think it would still be difficult, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to need 2,000-4,000 people to really make it successful, you know? I mean, we did it, and we really gave a lot of prizes away, and we did it. We tried every single way of doing it, offering free games, paid games, anything and everything. And it's just different in every city, you know, how people react to it. But I think if you just had one game, you know, I mean, the Dis-Tac-Toe was super fun. You know, the Pendulum game was a lot of fun. I mean, and Nate Heinold still has that, and he uses that at his event, and I think people love it. But yeah, the pyramid. I mean, a lot of those things that we did, you know, people have duplicated other places, and they have a lot of fun with it. So
yeah, true. Disc Plinko, we fun something. Yeah,
I want to come up with, like, they have the All Star event. Mm-hmm. I would love to. I'm just going to throw this out there because I don't know. Maybe Jeff's watching, but I'd love to make some cooler obstacles for the All Star event.
Yeah,
for the spectators and for the players. You know. Whatever, it's inflatables or something, bill or something.
Yeah, because right now it's just the net between two trees, and you go over it, you go around it, you go under it, you go, you know, maybe if you're lucky, there's a hole. I think you have to go through it at some point. We could do better. We could do better.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to
get creative. I don't know. If you don't have the inflatable guy, the just inflatable stick that's blowing around, if you don't have that.
I don't think inflatable is flopping around, but I think, you know, some sort of inflatable, you know, that kind of makes you throw around or under or through or whatever. Yeah.
You really don't need the inflatable.
I would love like some pyrotechnics. Like you hit the basket and it blows up. Like,
We just throw Gannon Burr out there. You know, just have him wave his arms around, you know?
Or maybe just like confetti cannons. Maybe that would be a little safer. Maybe fire wouldn't be the right thing. Confetti cannons.
Yeah, or maybe it's just a way of incorporating. You talk about, you know, the success of these games, maybe incorporating a few of the sponsors. I think of, you know, when the likes of Bevel or some other beer is on site, you know, maybe somehow incorporate the games with the beer.
And here's an idea for the Pro Tour. We're just giving them money now crying out loud.
I mean, come on.
As the players go through this rotation of games, just, okay, cool. The players are done with the distance competition or whatever. They move on. Charge fans. You want to throw distance? See what you can get. The skills challenge. Hey, now that they're done, they're over at the putting. Anyone that wants to hang out, you get $5 and you get to run a round of your competition. And, you know, it might not make a lot of money. I don't know who's all going to be at the All-Star. It's usually not extremely, well, in the past, based on where it has been, it hasn't been extremely well attended. But this year, assuming it's in Orlando, I think, is that what it was announced?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so.
It's going to be in Florida for sure.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, I don't know if it's definitely Orlando or not, but it could be pretty awesome. So it could be well attended.
Yeah, we just got to have fun with it. You know, I mean, everybody takes everything very seriously, and but I think that's a fun event. I think for the pros, it should be a fun event.
Oh, yeah.
So backing up just a little to the idea of some brands and players, and obviously there's been a very significant trend in terms of players often having their initials that then gets turned into their logo of some. I think obviously some do it better than others. Some people think just overall the whole concept is played out. Whatever. I think if it looks damn good, like then it looks good and it is what it is. And I think it depends on what kind of personality is attached to it. My question to you would be, where should players go? Is that, can they start with you guys? Should they find first, you know, some other designer and then bring to you some things to get printed or merch to get made up? Like, what's kind of that process?
Yeah, I mean, if you have a concept, we're happy to make it look good. But sometimes people need creative work done. Mm-hmm. We don't always have a ton of time for that. But there's so many designers out there, especially with Instagram and TikTok. These guys, the way they promote their designs and stuff, I've used several of their services. Actually, the design that we did for Terry was, a result of one of those. Mm-hmm. But get a good logo. It doesn't have to necessarily be your name. It just needs to be you. You know, I think Brian Bearhart is a great example of a really good logo.
Luke Humphreys, I like
Katrina Allen's, like Rose. Yeah, Luke Humphreys. You know, there's some, obviously some of the, you know, initial logos are cool, but yeah, it's been done a lot, so it's really hard to make all of them look cool.
I hate it because I have three initials and it never works out for me. So it'd have to be JV and D, and it just it's not going to work for me. Sorry.
I mean, at least you'd stand out. I think what's clearly going to be partially difficult is that when you have two players, higher profile players, and they have the same exact initials, and then it becomes like, just kind of not a standoff, but like, okay, well, now you have a direct comparison. You're not only are you comparing with everyone else that's done the letters as logos, but now you have to compare with that other person that also has the exact same initials and can be maybe a little more obvious which one looks better than another. So they can come to you now. In the past, you've done quite a few things for the manufacturers as well, and or for players directly. Describe some of that relationship and how you sometimes fit in terms of helping outfit either the players or help with some of the manufacturers.
I think Sarah Hokum's probably one of the best examples. She was one of the first players that I sponsored back in 2009. And we've done everything from wrap her van, I think, four times now to, you know, make all sorts of merch for her. And, you know, even just recently, we do fulfillment for her online. If she needs more stuff when she's on the road, we ship it to her. You know, we help her out in a lot of different ways. And we do that for some other players as well. Brian Earhart has his stuff online now, so go check that stuff out. Nico has stuff online. We kind of help out all these players from, you know, finding the right garments, you know, certain things maybe they wouldn't know or see. I think that's the other thing too, is I know what other people are doing. So if two companies are doing the same thing, I usually let them know so they don't both show up at the course with like the same
polo standard kind of style for the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, hey, let's not use this, you know? So I kind of help, you know, guide them to a unique product so they're not showing up like everybody else.
So as much as you may love all these players and manufacturers, you have to assume you love contract season, because that could potentially mean someone needs to get their van unwrapped and then rewrapped with a new sponsor, or they need all new apparel, or, you know, all new stuff. That sounds like it benefits you. Right?
Yeah, I'm not so worried about people going from sponsor to sponsor. I think I'm more excited about when sponsors take their players' brand and try to, you know, do something with it and invest in it, you know, making products, whether it's discs or whether it's shirts. It doesn't always have to be apparel, but that's what's most exciting. When everybody's excited when they sign a new contract and they want to have their apparel line out, they want to have all their stuff, and that's fun to put those things together.
What are some of the, maybe some of the advice or ways you may steer players? Because it's been pretty obvious that not every player is business forward or business centric, and they don't necessarily need to be. That might not just be their style, and they're concerned about playing the best disc golf they can. But what might be some of the things that you either recommend or make sure they consider or enlighten them to when they're looking at building some of this stuff out?
I think, you know, it's kind of, I came from a music background, so obviously, you know, owning your brand, owning your logo is important, but there's going to be some manufacturers that maybe create a logo for you that's really good, and they're going to own it. So you just have to decide how you want to do that and how you get paid for that. Because if you do switch a manufacturer, that logo is going to go by. And I've definitely had to throw a lot of stuff away, unfortunately, or recycle stuff or whatever. But yeah, either figure out if you're going to make your own logo and own it, or if your company's going to own it and you're just going to get paid maybe higher for it, you know, upfront versus long term.
Yeah, and that probably, I think, one of the most high profile players, you know, that we could talk about there is definitely Simon Lizotte. That was a big part of the conversation about when he
had the left. Lizotte.
Yeah, he left Discmania, and then even him saying, you know, maybe he feels as if moving on or having a different logo would be fine anyway. Kind of gives you a fresh break or a fresh start. But his logo was not only good, but it was quite, you know, obviously it was synonymous with him.
Yeah, I was just browsing around looking at different shirts, just ideas for jerseys and shirts and things like that on the disc golf spots. And I went to Thought Space and I saw that they had a bunch of old Lizotte stuff still from Discmania. Discmania logo, all his old jerseys. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not selling. It's probably, you know, he's got so much more cool stuff now with MVP and the whole, his new Simon line. I was like, God, there's got to be so many like people that are stuck with old shirts, old hats, old whatever. It's amazing.
Yeah. So if you want that $20,000 mystery box, I will hook it up.
So that's called throwback now. That's retro. It is valuable. No. Don't let anyone tell you different.
Yeah.
Got to hold on to it long enough. That's what Terry's doing.
You know, I'm in it for the long. Yes, I'm in it for the long haul. Or just like I saw a post not too long ago from one of the collector groups or one of the disc golf groups on Facebook, and somebody's like, "This is crazy, Paige Pierce, blah blah blah, on this, you know, Discraft Nuke or whatever it was," and it truly was blowing a few minds as to what it was and how it was signed. And I'm like, guys, that's from when she was originally on Discraft. She went Discraft, then to Prodigy, then to Dynamic, and then back to Discraft. And just the fact that it existed, I think, you know, some people just don't know that history. And so, you said, you hold on to something long enough, you never know.
Right. It might come back around.
Yeah, I mean, I had like one, the buzz that I throw is like a Dynamic buzz that I got from GBO in like 2010, you know? So some people don't know about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so one of the questions I think that just came in, Mike had said, besides discs, what merch seems to sell the best? Shirts, minis, hats, etc. What are, just generically speaking, like what are some of the things that seem to move the best for players and for support?
I mean, I think for clubs, bag tags are probably one of the best things because they can sell them typically for a pretty good margin. A lot of clubs are selling bag tags for $20 and $25 for their yearly membership. And obviously they cost them $2 to $4. So that's probably one of the best things to generate income for your club. But for events, obviously things that don't have sizes like hats, beanies, patches, trying to think of some other stuff we've done, like little backpacks, you know, that kind of stuff. Otherwise, you know, you start getting into rain jackets or hoodies, umbrellas, you know. It just depends on the part of the country. I think that's what's really cool about disc golf and what's helped me with my business is that, you know, disc golf is seasonal where I live. But, you know, this time of year, I'm still printing for people in California and in Florida, you know, where it's warm. So it doesn't really stop.
So start selling those electric vests up here. So, you know, just some custom logo electric vests, you'll be set. Keep everyone nice and toasty up when it's getting cold now.
Yeah, that's a good call. What are I know I've been a big fan of neck gaiters throughout the years, and I feel like those even go in spurts in terms of their overall.
My daughter loves hers.
Popularity.
I still see a ton of them. I mean, we did so many of them during the pandemic, and I still see people wearing them, which is super cool. I'm glad that like it was a multi-purpose and it wasn't just a pandemic thing, you know.
Yeah, and just to be clear for everyone out there, there of course, especially during the pandemic, there were really thin cloth neck gaiters that a lot of people were wearing, basically in lieu of masks. And then there's also like a thicker winterized neck gaiter as well that you I'm talking about, at least in terms of Wisconsin. I was always a big fan of those, and I got some pro tour ones as we closed out a season and ended up doing those for a tournament. And I'm often told those are some of the best player pack items I've ever given away. Tom McManus loves his. So you can thank Tom. I know we kind of joked about timelines and such, but when should people be planning? When does it become crunch time? You know, what are times that people need to be really cognizant of in terms of getting ready, whether it's for the year or for an event? Like, break out some of those timelines and how that typically works for you guys.
Typically, our big rush for bag tags. Obviously, some clubs start much later in the year as the weather, but most of them are ordering them in December and January, you know, to get them out to their club as soon as possible. As far as events, I typically try to get people to start getting designs and stuff at least 30 days prior to the event, sometimes much earlier, because most of these guys are getting distamped. And during the pandemic, that timeline was much longer than it used to be. I think it's probably catching back up a little bit, but you know, we're trying to have final numbers for shirts about 2 weeks prior, sometimes 2 days prior, you know, in Terry's case. But yeah, as long as we have a working timeline and we're, you know, getting like a pop-up email of, hey, I need shirts for this weekend and it's Tuesday, it doesn't usually work out too well sometimes. But if we had the design already and artwork and we knew all the details and what was expected, then we usually can knock it out, no problem. So, but planning ahead is good. And just having that timeline of when you're going to close things down for registration. And if people miss that timeline, just you got to train them. They're not going to get a shirt, you know, or maybe you do order some extra shirts. But I know everybody wants to please everybody, but I think getting people to sign up early and not let those people that wait till last minute just to see what the weather's like, whether they're going to sign up or not.
Yeah. Or even I'll use it myself as an example for this weekend. The event sold out last week, and now I'm occasionally getting, I've probably processed 6 or 8 refunds in the last week that are immediately refilled with other people, but making a shirt order and getting the exact sizes makes it that much more difficult. If I had ordered to exact, you know, the exact number to the people that were signed up a week ago, like it becomes really challenging to be able to accommodate for everyone. I might have the same amount of people, but it's like, hey,
if they're the same size.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If four larges, you know, got refunds and now 4 double extra larges show up, like you might be out of luck.
That's a separate wait list. Like, oh, sorry. No, you were number 1 on the wait list, but you're number 3 on the XL wait list because we have to couple larges that we had to clear.
WEIGHT list, right?
Yes, that's a different wait list.
Exactly. So believe it or not, that's something that does get taken into consideration from a TD perspective. Like you said, you can order extras, but then sometimes a TD doesn't want to be sitting on extra, you know, on extra units.
Well, I think that's one thing that obviously you do really well, Terry, because you kind of can co-brand it with your event, but also your own personal brand and use them for later. But a lot of people don't want to have, you know, just their event logo on shirts, you know.
Yeah.
So
sitting on 20.
I think that's a good idea, too. Maybe. Yeah, not having event-specific shirts, just having a unique, cool shirt, you know, whatever that may be.
When it comes to events, you very much are a disc golfer, but you don't play as much as you used to. You got into the disc golf business and now you're not playing as much as you used to. What has to happen in order for you to actually go out and play and compete these days in a tournament?
So one of my employees has recently kind of gotten the bug, and going out and just seeing him improve has been one thing. You know, he's asking me to go out all the time, and I go when I can, but obviously having young kids is difficult. And obviously a lot of work and travel, but he's definitely motivated me. I've definitely been out more this year because of him, you know, just seeing how much he's improved. And not that I'm any sort of teacher, but you know, I've played long enough to at least give him a few little pointers and see that improvement. And that's pretty cool.
So what is the, I think it's a great story. Talk about, you know, you started making t-shirts in high school. Kind of briefly, like, walk us through the evolution of the company, and then how many disc golfers, if any, do you employ? Well, obviously you have the one you just said, but it's not a disc golf. It's not a disc golf centric business, right?
Yeah, I forced all of them to go disc golfing one day. So we took the whole shop, and everybody got to try it. So that's honestly when one of them was like, "Oh, I'm going to do this," and just getting outside and exercising, and I'd say about three serious disc golfers that we employ. And then, you know, the rest of people like have played, but aren't playing competitively anyways. But yeah, as far as when I started, playing disc golf in 95, my dad lived in California and I played at Morley Field. That was the first place that I played, and Snapper Pearson showed me how to throw a disc. I had no idea who he was until probably 15, 20 years later when I saw his name and like the Hall of Fame and stuff. I was like, wait, that's the guy that showed me how to throw the first time. So, and then, yeah, I was trying to get a skate park here in Springfield, and at park board meetings, somebody else brought up a disc golf course, and I said, that'd be cool too. And I met with them, and next thing you know, we had a disc golf course in about a year. And then now we have four. So it's been pretty cool to see that grow.
And then in terms of the growth of your company, like when you started making stuff, I mean, you started exclusively with t-shirts, and then like, what was some of that evolution? Like what were a few of the milestones for you?
Well, I was going to say you started because you were in the music industry, right? Were you doing it for your band, for other bands? Like how did that go? And anyone we've ever printing heard of?
Printing for my band. We did some stuff. Well, no, I don't even want to say any of that kind of stuff about bands, but, I started with the music, and my friend had a skate shop. So, you know, we were printing for the skate shop, and I really wanted to have a brand that I was selling. I mean, I think at the time Terry had Skyline, his apparel company, and I was like, oh, that'd be cool. I want to do that. But it is literally the hardest thing to ever do. So the people that do that and do it successfully, I'm very impressed. And I just thought it would be much easier to print for people that just needed stuff for their clothing lines or for their events. So I quickly changed Paragon from a clothing brand to maybe more of a clothing provider to other people, you know, to really work alongside with them instead of, you know, trying to work against them. I still make some Paragon stuff and I don't typically sell it. I usually only give it away. So if you ever want something, just hit me up and I'll try to get you something.
Yeah, I've got a Paragon shirt, I think, upstairs from something. I don't know. I have to look.
I mean, I'm pretty sure you're wearing something right now.
Well, this is something that you guys printed for us, the Smashbox TV shirts. Right. And I put this on this morning, not knowing you, because I rarely know who the guest is going to be. That's Terry's job. He comes in and I tell him, like, who's on tonight? I'm like, cool. All right, we're going to have Miles on. And I realized, like, oh, yeah, I'm wearing this. Yeah.
Yeah. He texted me today. I was like, is it that slow in disc golf right now? He's like, yep, pretty much.
Right, no, cool. I said you were the first person that popped into my mind.
You were the first retailer he talked to.
Yeah. Once I knew my shirts were, you know, on the truck, then I was like, okay, now we can have this guy on.
Yeah.
If they're going to get here in time. In doing that printing, has it been done? Because it's great that you're in disc golf and you do all this stuff for disc golf. I think what's could be really exciting and inspiring for others is to realize, like, you start out like disc golf adjacent in some ways. You know, your primary focus wasn't like, hey, I'm going to create this, you know, big printing company and exclusively do disc golf. But you found a way to incorporate and partner and everything else. What is that like? Like, how big is your operation? And then name maybe a few of the other places you do some kind of back end work and fulfillment for, don't you?
Yeah. Obviously, we work at the Pro Tour. We used to do a lot of work with NADGT. Mm-hmm. We work with Upper Park. You know, so there's a lot of things that we're touching and shipping out for these companies. I think some of the coolest things is just, you know, when I first started, I had 2 employees and now I have 22 employees, you know, and the first 2 that I have still work for me. So that's
wow,
pretty cool.
When did they start?
I mean, Johnny and I worked together at the skate shop. So we were printing shirts when we were working the shop. So if you really count that, it's probably like 2001 or 2 okay. or something. I don't even know. Right around there. So it's been a long time.
And you, if anyone follows some of your Instagram, you guys manage to have a good time at the shop. Things don't get, I mean, obviously you have work to do and there's some serious business, but it seems like you guys find other ways to make sure you keep it loose. What was going on there a week or two ago that I asked you about?
What are you talking about?
Did you have some kind of games that were played? I've seen one chip challenges that take place. You guys always celebrate birthdays. I see that.
Yeah, we always do birthdays. Actually, tomorrow.
Oh, chili cook-off. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah. We did a chili cook-off. That was pretty fun. Yeah, and tomorrow you'll have to follow our stories. It's gonna be fun. I've got the whole shop split into 3 teams. They don't even know any of this yet. Ooh. And I can't really give too many details because I don't want him to get a jump start on it. But it's a scavenger hunt. That's all I will say. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
You should design a scavenger hunt that ultimately like just gets more work done. Like, who can print these 50 t-shirts the fastest? Who can get them boxed up and over to UPS the quickest? I don't know.
Do you have any Hall of Fame, Hall of Shame stuff that you keep? Like things that are so good, you're like, wow, I really like this kind of maybe stuff went away, or things that are so bad that you hang up in the office and you guys all laugh at.
We definitely always say every day is a new way to mess up a t-shirt.
Okay.
Unfortunately, like unlike stamping discs, I feel like the disc industry is so lucky. When they mess up, they literally sell the disc for more.
Sometimes,
yeah. When we mess up a shirt, like we typically have to throw it away or use it as a test print. Uh-huh. Like, man, why could I not get in that industry where when I mess up, I actually got more money?
Mystery boxes. Who wants a 12-time miss stamp t-shirt from the local high school?
Well, so we did a triple stamp thing for Nate at Ledgestone. I don't even remember exactly what the design was. But it was so weird for our staff to look at something because it was supposed to look like it was misstamped, you know, how a triple stamp would look, but it looked misprinted. So anybody maybe in our industry would look at it as a terrible print, but anybody in the disc golf world knows exactly what that is and like, oh, that's a valuable disc right there. So yeah, it's kind of funny when those two worlds collide.
Well, just as one example, I ordered 190 long sleeve, really thin, like t-shirt hoodie materialed shirts.
I love the Smashbox one that we have, the one that's upstairs.
Oh, that's a different one. But I love
anyway, the Smashbox one.
So there. So that's what I ordered. With that in mind, if I ordered 190, that's what I'm hoping show up tomorrow. How many are you ordering from the manufacturer in terms of then making sure you have a few extra? Like, what's that number roughly? If I ordered 190, how many are you guys ordering?
I ordered 190.
So you didn't F up a single one?
No. Our guys are good, man.
Dang.
We're usually operating on like a 0.01 loss.
I was just going to say, what do you guys call that? Not really shrink, so yeah. Loss. So that's what you guys.
Yeah, and I'm okay. And typically, I mean, I know you ordered extras, so if I had to short you 1 or 2, but it's a single color. If we were printing like 5 print locations, yeah, we might order extra. But with 1 print location, 1 color, 1 side, I mean, if we messed up, then, you know, then that was bad. But yeah,
typically. Quality control's coming in tomorrow. I can't wait to. I'm going live just to double check that every one of these looks.
Yeah,
good.
Let's do it. Do it.
I have faith that it
make
will.
Make sure they're all straight.
Yeah.
Make sure they're all straight and the right color.
What is
you change the color option at the last second?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
can't make anything easy.
I love it. I love the throw Tara into the bus segments. This is the best.
I'll bite my tongue a little on
You're
these.
Finicky.
Yeah, sure. what is the biggest misconception or misunderstanding that people have when it comes to, I'll keep it just to screen printing because I know you do a ton of stuff, but when it comes to screen printing and running 190 of these hoodies for me, of which about 60 will still be for a sale, what is the biggest misconception or just, yeah.
I think artwork, usually people grab artwork from, especially if they've never printed anything before, they just maybe grab from their Facebook page, screenshot, text it, whatever they want to do. And they think, we'll just print it. It looks good. Like, yeah, on the phone it does. But when we blow that up, it's not going to look crisp and clear. And so, you know, letting people know the difference between vector and raster images is probably one of the hardest things to do. But if people have ordered discs, they usually know and they can usually get artwork. And a lot of the disc manufacturers, we share logos back and forth if they need something or we need something. We can usually get it. You just got to ask.
Yeah, it's got to be getting easier. And I know you touched on this earlier. For God's sakes, I technically took a picture of something that turned out to be the stamp for this week, took a picture and turned it into vector artwork myself. I learned that all on my own.
But see, here's the thing. There's some of those websites out there where literally it just changes the extension. So I saved it as an AI file. And I'm like, it's still that crappy JPEG. No. It's just an AI file.
I opened like actual Illustrator and I followed some very easy online, step-by-step process. Mm-hmm. But my point though still is, that all that technology, computers, everything else have made things so much more easy and accessible for people to actually get things figured out. Have you found...
And with just YouTube, I mean, you can literally go watch a YouTube video and it'll show you how to do it.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
YouTube University. Go to it.
When was the last time you actually screen printed something? Like screen printed on a old school like screen and not one of your fancy new machines.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute. Probably maybe like the last time we did a live printing event a couple years ago.
Okay.
Where I had my original press that I had, like one of my mom's friends welded together for me in 2000. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't get to do it much. I'll go out and catch or pull occasionally, you know, but I don't get into it as much as I used to.
I feel like a lot of our technologies, some of that stuff is just becoming more obsolete and or there's just other ways that it's getting done and providing as good or sometimes better output. And therefore, some of those skills and trades clearly are just either not being taught or just people aren't familiar with them whatsoever. Are you brought into the local high school and like, kids? Still make your screens. Are you still, do you help? I mean, what is it about maybe that art and or that process that keeps things alive?
Well, I think just seeing the end product is what keeps it alive. I actually just did a career fair at my high school on Friday. And the teacher is actually retiring. Her first year was my last year in high school. All the equipment has just changed drastically. I mean, one room used to be just offset printing equipment, printing paper. All that equipment was gone just in the 2 years that I was there. And now it's completely gone, you know, because everything's really digital. There's not a whole lot of like offset printing and t-shirt printing is getting there that way a little bit. I mean, there's the DTF printing, not the DTF you're thinking of, Terry.
Damn it. I was like, me and Snooki in Jersey Shore with Jay Wow had a few thoughts there, but anyway.
Direct to film printing, like that's a pretty hot thing now. So, and then obviously direct to garment, that was a digital print thing. I feel like that might not stay around forever, but then there's some hybrid printing where you're screen printing your base and then you're digital printing on top. So there's things that might eventually affect our industry. I just don't know when or or how fast that'll happen. I mean, it's still very, very expensive. So, but I think the way that we do it is the most cost effective way to do it.
Give everyone, just because we've all seen the ads, I think almost no matter what your algorithm is, at some point you see an ad that's like, oh, order 500 t-shirts with anything you want on it, and we print it tomorrow, and you know, we get them to you for $400, you know, 500 t-shirts for $500, yeah, whatever the insane pricing is. Give us the, like, the yay or nay, or like, what are they missing so that people...
The quality of the shirt, probably.
Do or don't get sucked into that. Like, what's going on there?
Literally do like hundreds of those orders a day. And if you order, if you add anything else, it's going to be regular price. And most people want something else, you know? So I know some of those guys that do that and they're super successful. Sorry, my cat is just like wanting to play with everything. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely times when I've thought about doing that. That's not really our business model. But yeah, I mean, we have deals like that, and we probably have pricing very close to that sometimes. We just don't go around advertising it. So yeah, if somebody needs a deal like that, hit me up. I'm sure I can probably get very close to it.
And what, like, quantity? So small quantities, large quantities? I know my wife and other people I've recommended to you have gone to get like shirts. Like, oh, we're doing a team walk. We'd like you know, a dozen shirts or something. Is there a specific quantity that you prefer to work with, or that you kind of shun away from?
For screen printing, 24 piece is our minimum. But we, with the direct to film printing now, we literally do one shirt. So if you need one shirt, we'll do one shirt.
Cool.
Obviously, it's going to cost more, but you know, if you need the shirt, we'll do it.
Well, what do you feel like is next that we're going to see? And I'll use either I'll say regular tournaments or pro tours or majors, whatever. And of course, I don't need any insight as to who would be on them. But what are some of the assets that you think we're going to see coming out? Like, what's kind of hot? What's trending right now that you think you might see a major or regular tournaments or the pro tour start heading into? What types of like assets or other things?
I think some of the inflatable stuff is probably going to start happening. I think as there's more money, that, you know, it's going to, the quality of the assets are going to get better, you know? So some of those 3D signs, maybe instead of being foam, they'll be metaled, or they'll be something a little more solid, that'll last a little bit better. So somebody hits it with a disc, it doesn't put a hole in it.
Brian,
as we've seen before, I think that was Brian Earhart too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think just the quality is going to, and I think things are going to maybe get a little bit bigger, you know, on scale. Just as these venues look bigger and more people. So big archways, big flags,
more meat, more sausage artways. Are you going to be, are you a sausage maker? And are we going to see more sausage artways?
Like archways.
Archways, sorry, that our player is going to be walking through.
Yeah, I don't know. I see, the one thing that we did was for Johnsonville, that was the follow through mats. What did you guys think of those?
I don't remember.
I mean, I thought they looked cool. I was worried somebody was going to trip on it, but, you know, I think that was a really cool asset, and it's helpful, honestly, I think, for courses.
Yeah, I like it. I'm good with it. Again, I put on my course designer hat and I think about, you know, one of the most eroded spots on an entire course. Obviously, you walk around a basket, so that gets eroded. And then right off the front of the tee, the front and the back of the tee are very common places for erosion. So to have some kind of a mat there or something as people fall forward, not to say you can't, you know, eventually kill the grass and everything else. But if it's set down there for a weekend and or if it's incredibly muddy or something, I love the idea of having some of those mats. I remember seeing those the last couple of years over mainly at our Pro Tour Championship. What about, I think another popular thing that you are maybe involved with is some stencils that then ultimately get painted, and then usually that becomes more of a drone asset, kind of. Is something like that going to be maybe more popular?
That was a good example of something that I didn't necessarily have the capacity to do in-house, and I found the company that does it for a lot of the major football, college, you know, and pro teams, and just connected the Pro Tour with them and said, hey, these guys, you know, make it on the biggest scale. So I think there's going to, you're going to see more of that. I think that's a really cool feature. I think it's hard with ground screw of like getting the grass cut, getting it painted, potentially after painting it a second time. It gets kind of pricey with paint and time, but it does look cool if you get a good aerial shot.
Have you thought, again, just seeing a little bit of the F1 stuff in Vegas, have you thought about, I don't know, getting like 10,000 drones together and then having those all like do the stuff in the sky? Have you thought about that, or are you out of the drone business?
I mean, I got out of the drone business after the first one that I bought for you. So
that's when that drone got out of the business too, unfortunately. That was
the first flight, I think.
Yeah.
It was close to it.
Yeah, you have to link that video somewhere, Johnny, so that, you know, people that weren't around 9 years ago could go watch it.
Yeah. God, I remember that. I remember us learning to fly it inside Dodge's living room.
Yeah.
Like just inside, for those that don't know, Steve Dodge had a living room that was, there was like a
larger vaulted ceiling.
It was a larger vaulted ceiling, and you had a walkway around it, and we were just playing with it inside, up and down, up and down. And the first thing Terry does, he takes it out to go to hole one and drone hole one, and he gets all the way down there, and I'm standing next to him, and I'm like, Terry, and he's looking down at his phone. And then he goes right into the tree, just keeps going straight through it. Like there was, like it wasn't even there. Didn't realize there was like
just
a
didn't
one.
Realize.
Yeah.
Yeah. The delay on the camera.
The delay on the camera.
It came up quick.
And the tree came up real quick.
Yeah. I found it.
It is
linked
a beautiful
it. Shot. It was. I've linked it officially in our chat if somebody wants to watch it. I don't know if Johnny can possibly even bring it up on screen.
I can probably bring it up on screen.
We'll take a look at Miles. What, nine years ago or so?
Look
and
at
Miles back. Today. Yeah. Oh, you haven't aged a minute.
Yeah. Oh,
and I love it.
Paragon Disc Golf, and we're proud to sponsor Smashbox TV with aerial coverage. It's going to be awesome because they're really good at flying this thing, and it's going to look great. They're awesome at this.
Great acting skills, too.
Check it out.
I mean, look at just the course, how much it's changed.
Yeah. This is hole one at Maple Hill, of course.
It's a beautiful flyover.
It really is.
There's not an asset in sight.
Not a single one.
Awesome. Look at this.
Oh man.
There's hole one. It's right in. It's right. Oh Jesus. There. Nope. Oh gosh. Yeah. Fail.
So that might have been the maiden voyage and the final one.
I think we got it up and running a little bit. We fixed it, and it didn't. It never quite flew the same. I'll tell you that.
No.
I remember trying to do it myself, and I think I got it up one other time, and it just never quite. Ugh.
Yeah, I think you were back on like hole 10 or something, up on like the kind of the hill.
Yeah,
you own the other wide open area.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I haven't gotten much better since then, unfortunately.
You took it out just the other day. You were doing all right.
To this day, I still say, I don't fly drones. I try not to crash drones. Like, there's a very different mentality when you're going into that. And I applaud every single disc golf or otherwise, drone pilot that's out there that somehow can always avoid the trees. So, all right, Miles, winding down 2023, what... For you, and I know we just talked about a lot of different facets of disc golf and ways you're involved and things that you do. What excites you the most about as we head into yet another season of disc golf? You're obviously intimately involved on the Pro Tour and then all these different club and tournament levels. But what excites you the most as we head into 2024?
So one of the most exciting things for 2023 was the Northeast Disc Golf Expo,
mm-hmm.
Which for me was the first expo that was all disc golf that I knew of. I don't know if there was really anything before it. I jumped on that and helped Ben a bunch. And this year he said, hey, do you want to be the title sponsor? So 2024, Northeast Disc Golf Expo, January 27th, 28th. Really excited about that. Got a lot of the big manufacturers going to be there, hopefully dropping unique limited edition stuff. Last year, or I guess this year, I think there was over 1,500 attendees, probably about 40 different people showcasing products. So that's really exciting just to get all those people together and see people get really excited. It kind of reminds me of the days of like, you guys will remember like Bowling Green, you know, the big fly marts they used to have. It's like that, but even bigger, you know? So, unfortunately I know Terry, you're not gonna be able to make it this year, but hopefully, in the future, you'll be able to make it and maybe speak. I know Steve Dodge is going to be there and he's going to do a keynote, and, hopefully Brian Earhart. I know, MVP will be there, and Innova, and I don't know who, I don't want to say any other names for sure, but there's definitely a lot of the big guns there for sure.
Yeah, and I just linked it in the description, and I'll linked it in the chat. I'll try to remember to link it in the description as well. All the information seems to be on the website. As you just said, January 27th and 28th, Saturday 10 to 7, Sunday 10 to 5, takes place out in Boxborough, Massachusetts, exit 75. And then you have everything in here that somebody might need to know, right? The exhibitor info I'm seeing, vendors, sponsors, all that other stuff. And then
some of the stuff will get added as the event gets a little closer, as far as, you know, the time frame of when people are going to be talking and whatnot. But yeah, right now it's more about just getting all the vendors lined up and then start announcing, you know, special deals or special products that will be at the event.
Off the top of your head, what is there a fee to just to right there.
Yeah,
admission.
It's $15. Yep.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Free parking, admission. It's right there. You couldn't, as my mother would say, any closer and it'd bite you. It's right there in the top of the website. So $15. Yeah. That's awesome. And yes, unfortunately, I'm going to be out of the country around that time. But do you guys foresee this regionalizing, if that's a word?
Definitely something I'd like to do, you know, whether Ben wants to do it. I don't know how quickly that can happen, but it's definitely been talked about. So, you know, but I think plenty of people are wanting to travel. I mean, a lot of people are kind of getting that cabin fever, you know, that time of year in that part of the country. So they want to get out of their house and go do something. You know, Overthrow was there doing like form reviews, which I knew really nothing about. But I got to see those guys do some really cool stuff. And, you know, Jesse from Trash Panda was there and Robbie C was there. So all these guys that, you know, your YouTube personalities were there, which was cool to see those guys in real life and hear some jokes and, you know, throw some discs.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's awesome. Obviously, a few years ago, right, we saw the guys from Infinite were putting together, and obviously that came mid pandemic and everything else. And they're trying to get something similar going in Las Vegas before the Las Vegas Challenge. And then that ended up not materializing. And then the fact that you guys have this similar in concept on the other side of the country, you've already got 1 year in. And I think it's awesome that it's, you guys are all lined up for the second year, to keep things going. So.
And Ben added, I think, almost double the floor space.
Okay.
So there'll be a lot more vendors this year, which I hope brings more people.
And just as a little perspective, obviously you have a lot of merchandising and, you know, asset and opportunities, promotional stuff that you can fulfill and help people with. But then Ben has a background and does shows of this nature. That's kind of his bread and butter, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, he's been doing fishing expos with his dad for like 8 years. So he's got that part down, and I helped bring in a couple connections and of people that he didn't know yet. But, you know, he's getting to know all these people. You know, I know he's done some videos with Simon that have been pretty cool. I don't know if you saw the one where he threw that disc and literally, I think it was a hole in one, wasn't it? It wasn't his second shot. Did you not see that, Terry?
I don't think I did.
With Simon's new disc. Yeah, I think we watched it.
Did we?
Yeah, he had Simon's new disc. He
had thrown it. You should go watch
it. Oh, yeah, because he was talking about him throwing it better than he did or whatever.
Yeah. So, okay. So, yeah.
Well, and that's awesome. And I wanted to point that out specifically because stuff of this nature is such a large undertaking. And I love to see people kind of try to take it on. But then when you have an actual industry person that is bringing that knowledge, you know, right off the bat and able to help successfully organize and orchestrate it, I think that's just so much more beneficial. Not that anyone else couldn't do it, but when he already has that knowledge and that background, I think it's incredible. And it sounds like,
I think what was really cool though was a lot of the people that would come up and talk, you know, I'd ask them like, oh, what's your PDGA number? You know, just to start conversation and people are like, what's PDGA?
Sure.
Or okay. Like, oh, you watch the Pro Tour, they're like, what's the Pro Tour? So there's these people that are coming to these events that are just disc golfers that literally have not been exposed to any of this. And we just think that everybody knows about all this stuff already.
Sure.
So it was really cool to expose them to those things. One of the guys was actually Steve Dodge's plumber, and he didn't know that Steve started the Pro Tour. So I told him that. Wow. Then I think it kind of clicked, like, oh, that makes sense, you know, but he asked me maybe how I got started in disc golf. And I said, well, you know, obviously Steve started the Pro Tour and, you know, that obviously helped boost me. And he's like, he started the Pro Tour? Yeah. So, wow. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah. It is, because we're so deeply ingrained here, obviously. And I think that even speaks to maybe some of our viewers or listeners, like there's certain things you almost take for granted or assume that people are aware of, and everyone's on a different level in terms of what they care about within golf. I would think if you're listening to us for 2 or 3 hours a week on any given week,
you might pick something up
that, or you're already really into it. 'Cause otherwise we'd be a couple of yahoos, but either way. Well, Miles, also I want to get a plug in there that you, obviously I've come to you countless times for lots of different things. Smashbox has also utilized a ton of your services, doing a lot of fulfillment in terms of, the apparel giveaway as part of our Patreon for quite some time when that was one of our options. So we just got to thank you for, any and
all. Is that not an option anymore?
No, I stopped doing that because I started running out of ideas, and I know there's 1,000 ideas we could do. And it's like, I hate bothering.
But I heard they just changed some of their rules too, that people that were doing it more kind of like a lottery, almost, it was illegal in some states.
Yeah.
So now I don't even do those things.
Yeah. You're not supposed, I mean, for the, like the clothing giveaways and stuff, that's all totally legit. It's just when like using it for a drawing or a winning something like that, that you can't. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, there's certain restrictions based around some of that. So, but nonetheless, we have always appreciated all the help that you've given us and support you've given us over here. In fact, you saw some of the very original Smashbox logos and designs from way back in 2014. I have a Dropbox folder.
Did we design this one?
No.
Did we design this one? No.
No, we had some various ideas, and then there was some tweaking and some yeah, some final tweaking, and I think you probably took it from like a JPEG to making a vector.
You probably vectorized it for you at some point. Yeah.
But nonetheless, I know I have a Dropbox folder still with a whole bunch of original concepts and designs and ideas from Smashbox.
We could do a print up an all failed logo.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
I have some Smashbox shirts still on a shelf somewhere. So if you guys need some, just let me know.
Yeah.
I should have your shirts today.
Seems like that should be a giveaway tonight.
Oh, God. Maybe. Yeah.
A mystery box Paragon giveaway tonight, sponsored by Miles.
There you go.
I like it.
Yeah. Pick somebody's name. Pick a winner. Let's send them a box of stuff.
Yeah. You should probably still have.
Get their size. And I think we have some of the Raglan 3/4 sleeve shirts.
Yep.
And then just some of the original dry fits with just like the bar stamp logo.
Those are nice. Yeah. I like those.
Yeah.
Some of the, and I want to go on record here and tell everybody, it is in talking to Miles and then making a number of these orders throughout the last 10 or so years that any t-shirts that I do, that I order, will always be of at least the 60-40 blend to make sure they're super soft and super, super comfortable. You're never, I'll say from me personally, you're never getting a cotton t-shirt that Miles or anyone else has done. You're always going to get it in above, you know, a next level, pardon the name brand pun there, but you're going to get a next level t-shirt that is not just a basic standard crappy, you know, Jersey Hanes cotton, 100% cotton t-shirt Miles turned me on to that. So a lot of you guys, for the super soft shirts, you guys can thank the some of the influence there from Miles. So they, I'm sure, appreciate it, Miles.
Cool.
Got to get good t-shirts. All right. Anything else? Any sponsors you'd like to thank? No. No, but is there anything you'd like to say before we cut you here, cut you loose here tonight, Miles?
No, I mean, I do remember, Terry, when I think I reached out to you to try to print for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of gave me the cold shoulder.
I told you to F off. Because
I was a nobody. I had not been in this golf, you know, community for very long, and took a couple years, and then we actually got to meet, and then you gave me the time of day, and, you know.
Come on. You're spinning this a little hard. I
believe it. 100%. Yeah. Nothing, Terry, big time.
It wasn't a matter of being a nobody. It was a matter of seeing your advertising everywhere, and I'm like, what the hell is this stuff?
Yeah, you're not the only one. There's definitely other people that I wish I still had the emails of how rude they were to me that are now huge customers.
You have no email like that from me, though. None of me.
Well, I think a no response, probably.
Yeah, probably no response. Yeah, that's more like it.
Yeah, you're probably because you're trying to crash in on my tournament directing territory, and
I want to direct the tournament ever. I will never get in on some of the business. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Either way. Yeah, and then what? A few months later, I'm helping you with a tournament and film a tournament in your neck of the woods. I think it's all worked
out.
Oh,
that is true. That is true.
Yeah.
That was a really good event. I wish I could do that again.
We just need another weekend on the schedule. If you could just make
there's
one up.
Not enough weekends in the year.
There's not. Trust me. No. As much as I love running tournaments, I absolutely do miss it as well, and that's why I'm down to just the two that I have. So we're all running out of time. All right, Miles. Well, we appreciate you again. Kind of a behind the scenes, not nearly recognized enough hero out there on the tour. And I know what you and your staff all go through to keep things going behind the scenes. And I just really want to say thank you so much. And the disc golf community owes you a big round of applause. So we appreciate you, buddy.
Yep.
Thank you, guys.
You should be in charge of all of the Pro Tour shirts this year. This upcoming year. Make that happen.
I mean, I think there's going to be multiple people doing that, but we will try to do as many as we can.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, when I get off here, make sure you pick a name, get their shirt size. Okay. Let's send them some, like a mystery box of shirts.
Oh, I like it.
Oh, yeah, we could. Yeah.
Mystery box of shirts.
Yeah. Cause, yeah, we've got, yeah, like I said, you've got a couple probably of the ones.
Yeah. We'll of make ours. It happen. And then some OG Miles.
We'll some Smashbox and we'll give them some other stuff. It'll be a mystery.
All right.
Oh, he's just looking to billboard up people. I'm on to this guy.
A Paragon shirt, a Smashbox.
All right, buddy. We love you. Thanks again. Right.
We'll definitely get somebody's info here.
Wait for that QC video tomorrow. If I find one drop of screen print out of place.
Yeah, do it.
Okay. All right. Thanks, have a good night. Miles. See ya.
All right.
Later.
All right.
Terry Miller. Giving the guy a hard time.
Well, I mean, just saying. I am excited. And, you know, truth be told, exactly as he indicated, when I have hosted a number of events, it's been great to order. If I have 100 or 120 players, for instance, that will be getting them this weekend, I may order closer to 150 or even 200. And then knowing not only will I should for sure then have enough sizing for everybody, even all the people that change at the last moment, but then when I go to other events, I'll bring some of these along, and then people that want to support or hopefully get a cool looking item, I'll already have like a certain amount in stock. And that's exactly what will happen. Just like some of you saw the hoodies that we did last year for this event were kind of just a gray hoodie with a super thin, lightweight one that had my logo on the front in a kind of a gradient. This year, we're going to go with a slightly different route, but same style of hoodie, just different color schemes. So lots of good stuff. Sam says, not kidding, would buy a mystery box of shirts my size. So, Sam, well, don't go buying anything because you just might win.
We might.
You could win it tonight.
That's true.
Anything is possible. We'll be there.
We got to find a way to give something like that away.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll do that. All right, let's talk about some other things going on in the wonderful world of disc golf now that we got a little bit behind the scenes. Johnny, you want to start with a few of our larger scale events? Maybe rattle off just a couple of the winners.
I would love to. We'll start at the 2023 Lake County Trailblazer driven by Innova Pro Weekend in Eustis, Florida.
We talked about that last week because that was last weekend.
Was it? Oh, you're right. Yep. I'm sorry.
Andrew Marweed, still your winner, though.
He still won. Andrew still won. I mean, you know what? If you won it once, it's good enough to win it twice. I don't know if we have.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
Oh, the Jacksonville. You're right.
A-tier took place.
It just didn't.
A couple names you'll recognize.
Yeah, winning this one was Corey Ellis. Corey Ellis takes tied with Double G, Garrett Gerthy, but wins, obviously, in a playoff. Braden Sides in third place, and tied for fourth was Zach Kitchen and Ian Burchett. Over on the FPO side, Holly Finley wins this by a single stroke over Jessica Weiss. Third place, a three-way tie between Eliezra Middling, Sarah Hokum, and Morgan Linz. And it just kind of, again, it goes to show you, like, Eliezra is the real deal.
Yeah.
She shot, let's look at her round ratings here, 917, 957, 968. So she started out a little slow, only three strokes behind Holly, but Holly Finley just had a real solid next couple of rounds. And I think that we're going to see Ellie on the tour just kind of making a name for herself if she hasn't already. That was really the only A-tier we had.
Yeah, that was the big one. And the other one that continued to pop up on my radar was the Lone Star event that took place over the weekend. It was a B-tier, but it seemed like we had a couple of slightly larger names that were at it. And when it was all said and done, if you scroll down just probably a little bit. It's on there because I Lone Star Disc.
Oh, the Disc Championships. Yes. All right, that was.
It was a B tier, and again, I saw they did a great job because it jumped out on my page and my algorithm in terms of this B tier and having a couple. Some of our bigger MPO names that were playing were here.
Real solid payout, 46 players in MPO, but the winners took home $3,000. Aiden Scott won this in a playoff over Emerson Keith. Third place was AJ Carey, a tie for fourth place between Nicola Castro and Jake Hebenheimer. So otherwise known, I think, as Jason Hebenheimer. Same guy. Just they call him different names. He just picks a first name. It doesn't matter. In FPO, I did see this, that Juliana Korver shot her second highest rated round of all time. PDGA made a mistake on their original post, said it was her highest rated, but I believe she made a post saying at one point she shot like a 10-30-something rated round, thanks to Stat Mando correcting it. But Juliana Korver shot a 10-16-55.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What an amazing, like, just on the ball, winning by three strokes over Lisa Fakus. Third place, Deanne Carey. Tie for... Oh, you know, there's a big tie for fourth place. I was going to rattle them off, but there's like five or six of them. So, well done, everyone in fourth place.
Yeah. So, Juliana Korver taking it down this weekend. And then I think also in the news, somewhere along those lines, at least via her socials, we saw that she had made a comment talking about playing more in an international capacity.
Yeah, she's heading over to Southeast Asia, I believe, to play in some events over there, Australia as well.
Yeah, I don't know if she's playing. Is she playing in Asia as well? I thought, I saw New Zealand and Australia.
Oh, was it? I thought
I did not see specifically.
I thought I heard Southeast Asia from somebody, but maybe that was just a social media
post.
If
so, she's quietly skipping the events that I'm going to be involved with.
I don't blame her. I'm not going to lie.
So that's why I don't think it's quite
not the same.
That part of the okay. world, so to speak. But I know she is going international, and I think I saw New Zealand and Australia, as you had just mentioned. So either way, should be pretty exciting for her and for her husband, Jim. Jim making a post on social media just this evening, so I think that's why I was going to quickly talk about it, because it brings up a question that's been asked in the past, and I wanted to get right to it if I can find it and pull it up. It had specifically said somewhere he had said, and I apologize, I don't know the context, but this was a post from his Facebook that he posted somewhere. Perhaps the PDGA should give all Hall of Fame members a lifetime membership so the history can always be preserved and viewed. At this point, there are only 103 members. Seems like a small but important investment. And I guess for one clarification, it's always preserved. Viewed is
well, and that's
it's not your stats aren't there. They to some degree are hidden.
There's
to some people.
To some people, that's new with the PDGA this upcoming
year.
Talk
about that.
As if you are a PDGA member, you are going to be able to view all historic data from the PDGA, but you have to be a member. If you are no longer a current member, correct. If you are no longer a member and you have expired, then that data will be hidden to you from people who are not a member. For instance, we've saw in the past, Ken Climo had let his lapse. And so Nate Doss has let his lapse at times. So people could not view that data. Well, now the PDGA has changed it. So if you are a member, you can view that data, which I think is a great solution. I think we even talked about this last week.
I don't think we did yet.
We might have talked about it off the air. But yes, that is, I think that's great. I don't necessarily think that anyone has the rights to those, to see those. I think that is fine forcing you to be a PDGA member to see those stats. I'm okay with. Now, as far as Jim's conversation about Hall of Fame members getting a PDGA membership, I can give or take that, much like your discussion about whether YouTube should give you YouTube Premium after you hit X amount of subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that, sure, if they did it, I'd have no complaints about. I've got no complaints that they don't do it, because you could say Hall of Fame members, we could say world champions. There's always another level in my eye. And like when we say world champions, do we mean just MPO, FPO? Do you mean Masters world champions? Do you mean Junior world champions? Do you know,
world champions?
And then you go
doubles world champions, putting championships at the world championships.
And then we have the argument, the discussion like, well, why is Worlds any different than any other major? Should it be all major winners get life? Like it just, there is definitely a snowball that can happen and a cascade that, you know, give an inch, take a mile kind of thing, where I feel we don't necessarily, and I know you have to be voted into the Hall of Fame. You're not winning anything. There's only 103 members, 4 or 5 get put in every year, whatever that number is. And I wouldn't be opposed to it but you also have to remember the Hall of Fame is not run by the PDGA. We say it all the time. They work together, but they are not the same organization.
Yeah, so. And I think, again, clearly if you're in the World Disc Golf Hall of Fame, you are likely a very active and, you're a pillar or have been a pillar within the PDGA. That's almost for certain, right? So, yes, they do run concurrently in that sense for the most part. But as you just pointed out, and that was my major point to point out to the rest of the world that it is not the PDGA Hall of Fame, even if it consists of mainly or almost all PDGA pillars. It's not the PDGA Hall of Fame. It is an entirely separate entity. And that may or may not influence what you say or think, but that is just one other component that I think is worth clarifying for people out there, that it is not the PDGA Hall of Fame. It is the World Disc Golf Hall of Fame, and run and curated and funded by an entirely separate group. That's not the PDGA. None of your PDGA dollars go toward the Hall of Fame in a direct way. Maybe they issue them Some tiny.
There could be. I would not say.
Yeah, maybe I should back that up.
Because
might be the tiniest contribution every year in terms of the PDGA.
It's also hosted at the IDGC, so you could argue that there's...
For now,
yeah, that there's some sort of money transfer there. Sam Martin brings up a question or maybe a point regarding some of the membership stuff. And Taylor, maybe you would be better answer this being a tournament director yourself. Sam is saying for when a paid member or a former pro can't register in a different division if they're not a current member. But am I wrong in saying that if you're a former member, you would still put your old PDGA number in there? You just wouldn't be current. And when you as a TD submit it would still associate it with it, and they would see whatever your last rating was, so to speak.
Correct.
And so that, I don't think Sam is necessarily a thing. Now, there's nothing to stop any one of us from saying they're not a member. You know, I could go to any tournament and just be like, I'm John Van Derrison, I'm not a member, here's my $10.
Until somebody knows better and or bust you.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying there's not, if you're going to go that far where a former pro is now playing rec, as the example you gave, at that point, I feel like you might as well just say you're not a member and you can do the same thing. So it's, but
yeah,
and not that many people are legitimately doing that. Even you say that. So.
Yeah. And if people were to do that, that would, potentially set up some kind of grounds for a quote unquote suspension and or just being refused the opportunity to play. Just as an example, because you had said him and I knew he wasn't current. Nate Doss, for instance, who's obviously... busy running Bevel and hasn't played in a PDG event in a couple years. What is not current with his membership. He did not send in on his own. He did not send in for his membership. I could not see a moment ago. I could not see his statistics. I used my login that everyone's allowed to create or should create to create your profile within the PDGA page. I think a lot of people overlook it and realize
they do.
It's even a possibility.
I am a PDGA member and I rarely log in.
Yeah, so I've just logged in officially, which I created years ago. And with that, I can now see everything of Nate's. 1, 2, 3, 4. I can now see everything of Nate. So Nate Doss specifically is not a current member. I was going to say membership expired in 2018, expired then, but I can see all of his previous years and statistics, which is, again, this is on the newer end.
It's
of
a
being
good
available.
Membership benefit.
I think it's a great membership benefit. Cause a lot of people have said, like you said, Johnny, they're frustrated. They can't see it. Well, if you're current, you can go out and see others there. Now you could still make that argument as to whether or not it should always be available, whatever. I understand all of those other arguments, but right now, this feels like a pretty good compromise, and middle ground.
Not that I'm pushing for this by any means, but I wouldn't mind, it would not bother me one bit if the PDGA took away that little button that says show ratings for any non-person that's logged in. If you're not logged in, maybe not seeing that at all, and then not seeing membership information at all. So you literally have to log in to see the ratings. Now, I'm not pushing for it, but I wouldn't be opposed to it. Like, there's no reason why we have to give that information away. Now, it is useful for certain things, for maybe news organizations, if this ever catches on, where people really care about talking about the ratings. Most news organizations aren't going to reference, like,
more,
oh, he shot a 1062.
Sure.
They're more likely going to say number 3 in the world, Terry Miller or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly.
Or Ben Johnny.
So.
Yeah. But, so, great that it's out there. I did want to make that clarification and distinction that if you do log in, and that's something that was made, I don't want to say public, but made really called into the spotlight in the last few days, thanks to the PDGA. So it's out there and it's available. So again, you can have that conversation about the Hall of Famers as to whether or not they should or shouldn't. It's funny because you talk about people that you can see their stats, and then you think about where other memberships could either be granted or waived or provided or given. And somebody I think on our board just said top 1,000 should have a free membership. I don't know if you're meaning for the year or not.
But, no, I think he means the first 1,000 numbers.
Oh, the first 1,000
1 through numbers. 1,000.
Okay, I mean, I go as far as saying, you know, 1,000 is like just an arbitrary number, right? Because one could argue it could be 100.
I think it should be 999.
Yeah, 999.
Screw number 1,000, whoever yeah, he is.
Whatever the number ends up being. I was going to say, interestingly enough, you think about some people, there's going to be plenty of people this year who will pay to have a current membership to exclusively be eligible to run tournaments, which in theory yeah. turns around and makes money for the PDGA, which I'm all good with. You would think like they would even have quote unquote more value in some capacity. And I'm not advocating for any of this. My whole point is for every single scenario, I feel like you can always extrapolate out 2 or 4 or 10 more levels and or reasonings for to make an argument to be more inclusive of yet another person.
I mean, I think they should another group. Lifetime memberships to all podcast hosts.
Ooh, I don't know, because Spicy Boy and Shank Disc Golf just are starting their very first ever podcast.
You, I think you have to get to 400 episodes.
Oh, 400?
Yeah,
number.
Once you get to 400
episodes.
That's not
arbitrary at all.
No, it's just 400 episodes. At okay. that point, then you get a lifetime membership.
I'd say even 500, because who's okay. going to get to 500?
That's no one would ever get to 500.
I mean, so, yeah. But yes, shout out Spicy Boy. It was his birthday yesterday. Him and I apologize. I don't know the guy's. I don't think I know his actual name. But him and Shanked
just, DG on Twitter.
Shanked DG on X.
I'm going to call it Twitter forever.
I know.
That's
announced yesterday that they too are going to jump in the podcast.
Four AMs by AMs is I think one of their slogans. So which is great. I don't think we have a lot of AM centric. Podcasts, and I believe
agree.
I think you could really make a talk. You could talk about a lot of the college stuff. You could talk all about the AM championships that are out there, things that we just breeze over usually for their majors. You know, we talk about the AM Nats and the Amateur World Championships, and that's really about, and sometimes the NADGT is what we talk about.
Sure.
If they're going to focus more on the amateur game, then by all means, I think there's room for a lot of people.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So.
The other PDGA news that dropped last week, European Open. Set in stone, new date.
No, not European Open.
I'm sorry, not the European Open, the Champions Cup.
Champions Cup.
I was confusing my head because I was thinking it was going to interfere with the European Tour. The PDGA announced that the Champions Cup was moved to Northwood Black.
Yep.
On what happened to be the same weekend as the Swedish Open, or Sweden Open?
Swedish Open.
Swedish Open, which ruffled a lot of feathers all throughout the sport. Whether you were from Europe, some touring pros who maybe had wanted to make a plan to swing through Europe and skip some of the pro tour events here and hit some of the elite events there. Well, the PDGA now at this point, I believe, is talking about changing it again, which wouldn't shock me. I was talking to someone and saying that this is a difficult thing for the PDGA in that you want to have a place if you want to for sure run this event, which. Give or take the event. I personally don't care. If they skipped this year, it doesn't hurt me. I don't really care. Some people I'm sure do. That's great. But if you do for sure want to run the event, you need to have a place lined up. Like, it's got 6 months away now. Like, getting a venue, getting a date is important. Now, I think maybe what the PDGA could have done is announced this date with a little less concrete and just say, hey, we have lined up this date. We are still researching to move it to possibly other places or other times, but we wanted to solidify, have something set in, you know, at least set in sand. I don't want to say set in stone while we research other things. If we can find something else, we will let the people know and give a date. We'll let you know by January 31st or whatever that date is. I pick a random date that to set a deadline. Because what it feels like they've done now is they came out and said, cool, guess what? Everyone didn't like the backloaded majors. We've changed the date. This is when it is. It's at Northwood Black, four rounds. Everyone loves this course. Nate Heinold, still the TD. It's on this weekend, which I can't remember the exact weekend.
June 28th through the 30th or whatever.
Thank you. And now there's a big backlash, and now the PDGA feels like they're backstepping again. Like, oh, you know, we do care about the European Tour. We don't want to interrupt them. We understand that it's a problem. I would have rather seen them kind of come out maybe a little bit more tepid on the date. Just to say, if you really truly are thinking about a different time and date, don't make it look like you're so reactionary, because I think that looks poorly on the PDGA. Just say, we have this date if we need it. If not, we will let you know, but just know that this is a possibility. Because at least, again, at least then everybody knows, all right, the PDGA is trying to make sure, and in worst case scenario, we have to do this. Because it does interfere with, specifically, probably more so the European Tour, the Europeans on our tour. Many of them probably would have gone back, done a full European tour, and then come back, kind of like what we saw this year.
Yeah.
Not every one of our U.S. pros was going to do that. There would probably be a few. We know Thomas Gilbert had planned on it. We talked to him last week about it. There was probably a handful of other men and women that would maybe skip some and go to and tour Europe. It was a bad look for the PDGA. I think they kind of stepped in it in this particular decision, and they know it. And I think they're going to try to make it better.
I feel. So just to throw it out there, June 27th through the 30th is the 4 days that it was then pushed on to. And this announcement was technically made on Thursday. Yeah, the 16th. It was made on Thursday. I'm just going to start by saying I don't envy anyone's position.
No.
And I don't feel like there is a clear-cut obvious answer that satisfies everyone, because as this whole argument or conversation started, everyone seemingly hated the idea of extending the season. That mm-hmm. that was all due to the pine beetle and everything else.
Yeah.
So to push it back to the end of the year to extend the season even longer, I can't think of anyone that was truly, truly excited about that. But that was the idea. Obviously, as the PDGA had announced, there's no way the course was going to get done. They haven't started doing the clearing, so on and so forth. So the event then, at that point, I feel like then there's options. Then you have to look at the options. You move to a different weekend. You move to a different location and keep it on that weekend, which no one really liked in the first place at the end of the year. Or you potentially cancel it. That obviously could be a conversation for at any given point, right? Is to say, we just don't have a Champions Cup. We don't have a fourth major of the year for that year.
Yeah.
None of those solutions appease everybody.
Of course
not. None of those three. So, of course, when moving it to having the idea of bringing it to Peoria and making some concessions along with the idea that they would just use the black course, that they would change up a few of the holes so that the signal would be better. They weren't going to see the exact same course.
And for better spectators.
Yeah, and for spectators. You weren't going to see the exact same course that we saw for the Ledgestone event the last few years. We were going to see a slightly different configuration, kind of a hybrid of it, so that it would play different. Then one of the fallouts to that was, though, people then saying, I don't want to just see Sunset played on the FPO side.
Well, this is for Ledgestone.
I know, but that was going to be part of the compromise.
I know. Which you didn't say. Part of the compromise for Ledgestone is all the men only play Eureka.
And all the women only play
Sunset.
Yeah, exactly. So some people love that. Some people didn't love that. And then obviously the number one thing ended up being the conflict taking place with the Swedish Open. And if you want to look for a little bit of a silver lining in all of this kerfuffle, you could say, how damn blessed are we that we now have to very much worry about and concern ourselves with how many players are doing international travel, whether it's them coming here or Americans going there. The fact that we even have to worry, 5 years ago, this would have been nothing more than a blink of the eye, because it'd be like, okay, cool, that's going to affect like one person or three people that might travel because nobody's doing that. We're, disc golf has built itself into a position that this is now a legitimate conflict. I guess the question is, I know a lot of blame was placed squarely on the PDGA shoulders for this, and I don't know that that's entirely fair.
It's not entirely fair, but
I think the question
there
is
some.
Yeah, what was the conversation like, and was it were all parties fully aware and considered in the situation, and was this the lesser of all evils
that
they arrived at?
Correct. That's my thing. We don't know all of the scenarios, all of the decisions, the reasoning, because looking at the schedule, I had kind of breezed through it a couple, you know, when this announcement was made. The only weekend other than this that I think could work would be the weekend between Music City and DDO. So that would have been April 28th, 26th or 28th. KC Wide Open is going on.
Ooh.
The Charlie Ventner is going on. And these are all A tiers. The St. Charles Open in Missouri going on, all of which in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
So by moving a major to this weekend, which I think could work, you're harming, so to speak, some of these possible
potentially
majors. Now, granted, most of the people that are going to these events are probably not playing in the Pro Tour. You'll get a handful of them on an off weekend. So this, on these off weekends, Kansas City will probably pull in 10 of the touring pros that are traveling from Jonesboro to DDO. Probably 10, maybe a few more, who knows, give or take. You put a major on that weekend, they're getting none. Does that matter? Depends who you ask. The other thing you have to think about is now the date. April, end of April in Illinois at that particular park, probably a disaster.
Could be.
Wet.
It could be.
Sloppy. Possibly still snow on the ground.
It could be snow on the ground. And it could be 77.
It could be.
And absolutely gorgeous.
You're
it could
right.
be everything from 32 and snowy to 77 and sunny.
Correct. That's just the Midwest in mid-April.
Yeah.
So let's just play pretend. Now, if you're picking this particular weekend, I think you have to move the event. I don't think you can trust having it at that particular course. You need to go a little further south. I think you would have to go maybe south of Missouri or something along those lines, where you're probably guaranteed, but more than likely going to get 60 degree weather.
And possibly some tornadoes.
Who knows? Tornadoes. Right. You never know what you're going to get. But the goal of trying to fit it into the tour and have it accommodate the pros and have it accommodate the TD, who you don't know what Nate's schedule is like. I mean, he's probably got this, a lot of the stuff planned out months in advance. And even if you had to say, all right, Nate, you're going to sit this year out, PDGA will take care of teeing it. We've got Doug Bjerkus, who has a little experience. Mm-hmm. If you want something like that, fine. I'm sure Nate would not probably have a problem with that with a good enough reason. Nate's on the board. You still have to find a place to host it. We only have 6 months. You want to get a championship caliber quality course that Northwood Black is and guarantee a spot in 6 months. That's difficult to do because places book out months, years in advance. So the fact that they could get it on this particular weekend, which is the same weekend as the Swedish Open, and have kind of quote unquote everything work out, the lesser of all evils is my idea. Now, hopefully they find a better solution that maybe helps appease more people. There might not be. That might not exist.
Yeah, I was just going to say, at the end of the day, there could be one or six more date changes, and no matter what, I could find you a solid argument for why it shouldn't be that date.
Of course.
Right? And that's just a matter of which one is going to be the most appeasing to the most amount of people.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you just have to run with it and be locked in on it. And I've said it before, I don't envy any of the official decision makers, Johnny nor I, clearly, well above our pay grade, and we really have no bearing on it. It affects me as to where you and or I may be involved from a media perspective, of course. At the end of the day, wherever the major is and whatever my task is or isn't, I'm probably going to be on board.
Right. So
I'm just one little tiny part of it, though.
Just find the weekend the Vegas Challenge is on and put it on that weekend. Oh, don't be mean to Vegas.
No, I mean, and in theory, like if you did the math, though, that's not crazy.
No. Well, and here's another solution.
That wouldn't be crazy on that particular weekend.
I know this is not what most people want, but what you could do, take an existing event and just make it a major.
Absolutely.
And just either a pro tour event, say, hey, guess what? Jonesboro, and I'm just going to pick that because it was in my head.
Sure.
You are now the Jonesboro Open presented by the Champions Cup.
Or you're the Champions Cup and you're not the Jonesboro Open this weekend.
Maybe.
Some people may love, like Play It Again Sports, who's typically like your title sponsor or one of your title
could
sponsors.
Like there, that.
May love that or may hate that. Mm-hmm. I know that has been suggested and that's been said as well. I don't think it's the craziest idea. However, that particular, it has to be the right weekend. And they have to want to buy in.
Like, and there's different registrations. There's different money. And I think the PDGA, I'm not so much worried about the money. I think the PDGA could make it work for a year. If you say, hey, we need another $20,000, we need another $40,000. I truly believe the PDGA could find a way to make it work. They're already planning on running it, so the money can be shifted around. I'm not super concerned about that. But you're right in that the TD has to do has things. There's qualification things that you'd have to look at on the PDGA side in order to do majors. Certain people have to be qualified. There's just a lot of things.
Yeah,
there are just scenarios that we're probably not even thinking.
Well, I'll just throw another piece into that. Like you just said, the idea of the major was granted to, we'll say, Nate Heinold and his crew. Does he have an obligation to, quote unquote, stand down if it goes to a place, I'll just use, like you said, a Jonesboro, or let's say they go to the LWS Open, it's no longer the LWS, or maybe it's the Champions Cup presented by LWS, and we're playing it in Idlewild. Who's the TD on record and of doing that? Is it Adam and crew?
It's a great
Adam and Jason, or is that Nate Heinold and crew?
And it's a great question.
There's certain obligations that any one of those people, LWS may say, yeah, we love the idea of being a title sponsor, but we want our staff, so to speak, in charge. Yeah. And Heinold and that crew could say the other thing. I mean, look back to a few years ago, we had a major that got pushed back and somebody said, hey, I want to retain that major. Was that
that was US Utah. Women?
Utah, who
for COVID.
For COVID said, hey, we don't want to just give up our opportunity. We were granted a major. And if that means we come here during that next year, then we want to retain that because they were granted a major status.
And then U.S. Women's got pushed back as well in Madison. And
exactly.
That,
yep. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. And, you know, I know you just said that you have to find the location. Yes, that's one component. I feel like the weekend is even more crucial. The location is secondary to that. But let's just be real. Depending on the weekend, there's certain locations you'd almost for sure rule out, right?
I mean,
like you don't want to be on the West Coast for 2 out of 3 weekends, and the weekend in between, you have it taking place at the Regulator, which I know was something that was said quite a bit. Like, let's just have it at the Regulator, and they seem open to the idea. I don't think anyone's arguing about the quality of the Regulator. I think they're arguing about in which date could it possibly get played.
Correct. The problem with the fact that everything's been shuffled around is we have things already scheduled on each weekend.
Exactly.
My personal take on scheduling is the PDGA needs to schedule out these majors, I think, I think they want to do this 2 to 3 years ahead of time.
And I think they have.
They have.
But nobody planned on pine beetles.
Correct. I know, and that's what I'm saying. But to go along with that, I think we've said it before, we need a week on each side because I want to see these majors moved around everywhere in the country at any time of the year. I don't care where the pros are in August when Worlds shows up. If they're on the West Coast or East Coast, I don't care if Worlds is on the West Coast. That's why you need a week, but you need a week on each side so players can move. Because these are, I believe,
I don't think that's going to happen. Well, I get what you're saying.
Then the West Coast is fucking screwed. right? Because Worlds is always
in
August.
Don't you yell at me for it.
Worlds is always,
I'm not on the West Coast, not running events. Don't yell at me.
Right? Worlds is always in August, September, right?
No, it's been in June. It's been in September. It's been in July. It can be in any one of those months.
I think that you should be scheduling this, and the Pro Tour should not take it into account at all. Like, otherwise, we're always beholden to the pros going, okay, well, U.S. Women's, gosh, it would be really great if it were here, but they're 1,000 miles away. That's too bad. No, put a week on each side for these majors and make the pros travel. These are the biggest events of the year. Europeans have to travel for them. They have to travel thousands of miles. Our pros can't get on a plane for a week and travel 1,000 miles.
You tell
miles?
Them that, and then you tell
will,
the rest
every
of
one
the
of
internet.
Them.
You tell
every one of them. Like, I don't care. The pro tour should
the
have
problem
a
is no one cares
team.
What you think.
I know, but the pros. Well, this is it. If we want the best events with the best TDs, you can't rely on the Disc Golf Pro Tour to do that. Otherwise you're pigeonholing specific events at specific times in specific areas, and I think that limits you too much. That flat out limit. If you have a phenomenal crew that says, gosh, we've raised $300,000, but we can only do it on the West Coast, and it can only do it in like August, like that's our time. Sorry, you're out of luck, guys, because the pros are over in Massachusetts in August.
No,
you are pigeonholing our sport. The Pro Tour needs to have a consistent tour. I 100% agree with that. The majors aren't part of the Pro Tour. The PDGA needs to look at the majors, pick the best locations regardless of time, regardless of what the Pro Tour is doing, and the Pro Tour has to work around that. It sucks because all the cameras have to travel. All that stuff the Pro Tour has to take all that into account. But I don't think that the PDGA should have to be beholden to where the Pro Tour is. I hate it. I really hate it.
I would think if there is a sound enough, undeniable situation or bid that checks those boxes, I would assume it would happen. But right now, if it's not an overwhelming majority that checks off all those boxes and dots all those I's and crosses all those T's, I don't think they're going to rock the boat.
I know, and
every spectator says that's so stupid that we don't have a cohesive schedule, and then every player says it's so stupid, and every other entities, all these people say, if the schedule and the touring isn't logical and cohesive, it's stupid. Why aren't we fixing that? And you're suggesting, which I understand,
for our biggest events only.
The biggest events go wherever and whenever they want. And I hear you, but I'm telling you, the other 99% are saying, we don't like that. We don't care.
I understand that. I understand that it's inconvenient for them. All I'm saying is that I want to see the best.
I don't disagree.
And if it works out that it's in the tour, awesome. That's great. I just feel like right now we are. And again, West Coast, I don't care about you. You're great. Awesome. You've run awesome events. But if no one there is going to run a great event that wants the world's bid, I don't want to hear you complaining about it. But if there is one, also don't want the PDGA to be like, you can't run it unless it's this time of year.
I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case now.
I do. I think the PDGA probably looks at that and goes, good. You want to run it in September or early September or late August? Well, that's not where the tour is. We're sorry. We're not going to. We can't really.
I truly believe that probably comes into some sort of considered waiting to some degree. To how much, who knows?
I don't know how much. And all I'm saying is that I think and I feel like our biggest events, they should be scheduled 2-3 years ahead of time. And the Pro Tour, if they can schedule their events around it, great. But it really feels like the Pro Tour is starting to solidify where they're going to be, when they're going to be. You know that. Where are they going to be in March? Texas. Where are they going to be in June? Jonesboro. Where are they going to be later in June or July? West Coast. Where are they going to be at the end of the year? USDGC time. Like, we've already kind of set that. The rest is a little bit wiggly, but we have a tour. And I don't think that your majors should have to accommodate that tour.
Well, I mean, it's going to be clear that eventually one or more majors will eventually be international. Those will have to fit into the schedule
Worlds,
in some capacity. Whatever they are, they're going to be international, and they'll have to fit into the schedule.
PDGI hinted at it. Well, I'm just saying, he hinted. He was here. He hinted. I'm not saying it's going to happen. He hinted at it.
Okay. May or may not be Pro Worlds or Open Worlds, whatever the case is.
I know.
I think at that point they'll have to make I'm all about the planning. There is something to be said about a concrete nature in sounding like you can lock in something 100%. And I don't know that that's also completely plausible either. I'd use a potential example of you award Worlds to, I'll just make up a place like Santa Cruz in May. And you award them Worlds in Santa Cruz in May, 2 years out.
At least, I think
maybe let's call it 3 years.
I'd love to see 3 years.
Even better for my example, 3 years out. And then what happens when 18 months out, F1 shows up and says, guess what? We're taking over Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Like, you have to move that date. Like, obviously can do what you can do to plan. Just like these pine beetles is kind of my analogy.
Yeah.
There's certain things that you'll just never can possibly account for.
I'm with you.
Be able to shift and pivot and move. Now, who's malleable, which I hate saying that word, because it's tough to say.
I know.
Who's flexible? Who can accommodate? Hopefully your best teams, your pro tours, your PDGAs, like all of those people have to, at that point, like buckle up and say, hey, let's get through this. And I feel like this is one of those scenarios as well. Like, clearly, the pine beetle infestation, the not being able to clear it, the not being able to then go back there even late year, which wasn't ideal. Like, there's just a lot of things that seem to be against it.
Yeah, we are at the whim of the PDGA is not in control of the Army Corps of Engineers that needs to take care of this. This year is a whole is a whole thing that I don't put any blame on the PDGA. I don't put any blame on anybody. It's just this crap happens this year. And you're right. Anything could happen in any given year. But again, I would love it. And I know it's tough. I'd love to see our majors at least 2 to 3 years out. Let it be known.
I think they're trying to get there.
I know they are.
And I don't disagree with it. And then I also think you and I have been around long enough to think about... I don't mean to just be a rainy cloud over everyone's parade here either, but I think about think about a club and or some people that put in a bid and then host an event 3 years later. You and I have seen enough disc golf clubs in the country
fall apart
and dealt with enough disc golf diehard enthusiasts that one day are gung-ho and they're ready to change the world. And then 18 months later, they're indisposed.
they may not be available in some
capacity. So there is a fine line of like there's planning and pre-planning, and then there's like hitching your horse to a wagon a little too early, maybe. Like that could be also a problem to some degree.
I agree.
So I think it's tough to say, hey, in 3 years, we need this date. Mm-hmm. I think that's the tough part of your conversation.
It is.
We need this this date and only this date. There's so many things that could happen. Again, I think of anywhere on the West Coast, and then that same city, that franchise of some freaking sporting whatever wins it. Next thing you know, there's a parade that week along with, 300 other thousand people they weren't expecting. And like, just anything is going to happen, I guess.
Oh yeah. I'm not saying that anything is foolproof. I would love to see us out further. I would love to see, we've said it before. Just for the pros in general, a week on each side of every major.
And certainly,
and I would love to see majors go anywhere in the country, because I personally, and I know I'm not the one doing it, but I don't think it should matter if the pros have to travel for a major. We did it for years. Every year the major was announced, everybody traveled where that major was. And now that there's a cohesive tour, we're seeing a lot of kickback, like, it's out of my way. I don't care. We did it for decades. You can get in a plane. You can travel. If you truly care about these, the biggest events, you will accommodate them, because I want to see them ultimately with the best crew at the best locations. Yeah.
And I think that's presuming you have good bids coming in.
100%.
Like, which is very difficult. That may be a non-starter in the first place.
I know.
Like,
there's very few bids.
That's what we just said.
Some of this is out of the PDGA's control. I'm not blaming anyone.
We can talk to we're blue in the face about how we'd love to see a major in California, but if there's not a qualified team putting together a qualified bid on legitimate courses, like, all those boxes have to get checked.
And not just California.
Yeah.
Every state that anyone ever complains. Correct. How come the tour is not coming to Montana? Well, sorry. How come they're not coming to Utah? Sorry. They're not in Wisconsin either. You know, we get Minnesota and Illinois, but how come we're not getting a tour stop in Wisconsin? Well, because there's not a team that wants to put one together.
Yeah. It has to start there, I think. And I think that's what's often overlooked.
Run a pro tour event, Terry.
Yeah, no.
Come on.
No interest.
Do it.
No interest. Do it. All right. We're going to move on from that.
I'll
show
up.
So best of luck.
And watch.
Best of luck to everyone involved.
I hope they find a good
solution.
There's
a lot of finger pointing, and I know there's a lot of frustration, and I know there's...
Well, Macbeth flat out said he wouldn't be at the Champions Cup if it was that weekend. He'd go over to Sweden.
Yeah. And again, that's not something that, like, 5 years ago, like, could have been a viable threat, right?
Yeah, I know. No kidding.
Like, 5 years ago, disc golf was very different, and that wasn't... I'd have been like, oh, sure you are. Like, it's just... There's more things to consider now that are... and there were other people. Eagle McMahon chimed in and said, reschedule, so on and so forth.
Well, Eagle is in a unique position because he might not even be fully healed by then.
He might not even be throwing frisbees by then.
That's right. So Eagle is kind of like, no, push it back, guys. Push it back.
No, my only final thought on this is, the irony of what if Jackson's not touched come like April. They have the army hasn't touched a single thing.
It could
the
have
course
run
is
it.
Still in, you know, still there.
You can't.
I know. Yeah. I know. I was just thinking from a just an ironic perspective of like somebody goes out to Jackson on, you know, April 19th, whenever this would have originally been or presumably been. And like Jackson's 100% still intact just because they haven't touched anything. Mm-hmm. Again, you're not counting for that. The Army Corps of Engineer was supposed to start doing some clearing a few weeks ago already. So
things get pushed around.
Of course. We will see.
Yeah, Ray says, Eagle wants to do the All-Star event throwing lefty only anyway. Yeah, I bet she does. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we'll
it's
see.
It's the All-Star event, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, but it does.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, okay. I know some voting was extended. For your All-Stars, you could vote on what, second and third card All-Stars? I know I got mine in, but they ended up ultimately extending that slightly. And now it might be wrapped up by now, but I know at one point that got slightly extended. So I'm guessing sometime soon we'll see the announcements coming in for your second and third card people on the All-Star side of things.
And the only other interesting things that really was announced, there's a lot of different... surveys being released right now. Pro Tour did one that had a bunch of funny questions. Like my favorite is like, who's the mom on tour? And no doubt Jen Allen took that one.
Mm.
It should have been unanimously, but it wasn't. but there's a whole bunch of fun questions. Best dressed, best bromance, all this other thing. All great. Ulta World had another survey, a fandom survey that released it, which is a little bit more serious. In that, who do people tend to root for, root against, some favorites? There are other subjects in there. You can go to Ulta World's website and look at some of that stuff as well. It's somewhat interesting. You can really, they have a real fun, I think it's fun, breakdown of the type of person, like who took the survey. It asked you everything from like a religious affiliation to if you feel you're left or right, if you feel, you know, I see who gives the best hugs into her. Did you win? Did you even make it?
No, I don't. Apparently my tour card got lost in the mail.
Oh, I suppose it's only for touring pros.
Probably.
So
I didn't say creepiest. I said that.
But anyway, yeah. So go to Ulta World, take a look at that. It's really interesting. Some of the data and some of the breakdown of it and what people root for and against. No doubt Simon was far and away the most loved pro. Just the way it works. So.
Who's the dad on tour? You see that Nate Sexton,
which is funny. It should be Emmer Daddy, but sure.
Yeah, that,
his nickname
true.
Is Emmer Daddy,
and he is on tour more so than even Sexton. What we've seen out of Nate Sexton. Yeah. So I'll be interested. Just if we're since you brought him up, it'll be interesting to see Nate Sexton, his career, and where he's dedicating his time and energies and efforts to, in terms of how much he's playing. He's obviously been playing less over the last few years at our. As many events, so to speak, and knowing that he's got his daughter who's, you know, in that 5, 6, 7 age range, and time spent at home, then time spent in a booth, and whether that's a Jomez booth and or a Disc Golf Pro Tour booth. I think those are all very fair questions that will be part of the 2024 season right around the corner.
Yippee.
All right. Is there anything else of note that that was in the disc golf world? Excuse me.
I don't think so. I didn't see anything, honestly.
It was about this time last year. Last week. I'll throw it out there. 3 rounds of the Las Vegas Challenge are fully posted, and then the concluding round of the PLO, the Phoenix Ladies Open, which is another event that I was at not too long ago, obviously over there in Phoenix. The concluding round, the first round coverage, which I am working on, will be a montage of shots from people from all different divisions, spanning like the 20 different women's divisions. So that's more of a highlight montage. Try to get as many, you know, possible shots in there as I could. The second round, which was already released, was your standard shot by shot coverage of the FPO lead card.
You should do.
And it was a good battle. So
a mystery box of shot coverage.
Oh, just, wow!
Just like a YouTube thing. Just like, hey. Open this up, and you never know what shots I'm going to show. Just,
that's,
you know, just random. Sometimes
I think Omegle got shut down for that. actually, Omegle recently did close up shop. Omegle, it's
I don't know what that is.
It's kind of like a, for lack of a better term, it was like a video roulette.
Chat roulette,
like a chat roulette.
Okay, but, for us old people.
Exactly, and it was Omegle, and it was very popular for quite some time. And obviously it had a lot of your trashy stuff on it, but it had, I'm assuming, pretty good legitimate following to it. There's one particular artist named Harry Mack, who's this insane freestyle rapper. I feel like that was his original platform that he blew up on. And now he's kind of a big deal, but he did it specifically on Omegle. And I just saw it literally a week or two ago, it shut down. They ran out of
money
or business or whatever, but.
Imagine a video mystery box that someone buys. You might get a full 55-second cupcake putt.
Or a four-hour-long Smashbox video.
Or a four-hour-long Smashbox video. You don't know what you're going to get in this video.
Oh, my gosh.
And you just make them for people.
I'm going to make them into NFTs.
Yes, and make a mint.
Oh, my gosh.
A fortune, Terry.
I will talk to my friends at Mint Dis. Oh my gosh!
I'm full of ideas today, Terry. A little spit and vinegar.
You have the best takes. Also, speaking of new things, one of the PDGA announcements that I saw from a technical standards perspective was the new manufacturer coming out with their very first ever disc, Supersonic Disc.
Supersonic
released. And it is out and available. Well, I don't know if it's available just yet, but here's my tease to this. There's more to this story, and I'm excited to help bring it to you. Company out of Denmark. I know, I was going to say most of the individuals behind the scenes. Super excited to see what they have going on. Another disc manufacturer, someone who has been involved with disc sports for 30 or 40 years and is just a phenomenal human. So that's the tease I'll leave out there. There will be an interview coming up with some of the peeps over at Supersonic Discs. So
sounds awesome.
That's the tease I'll give you on that.
Excited.
One.
Can I get a Supersonic disc?
Supersonic, yeah.
Tim says that song popped into his head as well.
How can it not? The only other option is like a dunk by number 40 Sean Kemp, right? Like those are
the Supersonics.
That's
yeah.
pretty much the only two
yeah.
references you could possibly go with, right?
Yes, that's
and it was number is it number 40? Oh my gosh,
Sean Kemp?
Yeah, from like 1990.
I don't know.
I collected very few basketball cards.
I was not
Sean
a...
Sean Kemp, Supersonics. Number 40. Damn. Yep, 40. Nailed it.
Nice job, Terry.
There's a poll from 1989 or so. That's what I got. That's what I got. My daughter's birthday, maybe, maybe not. But
you know, Sean Kemp wore number 40.
I didn't watch more than 9 seconds in my life of a supersonic game either. That's how much I cared about him. But his card was worth something as a collector. So that's
part of the hustle. Somewhere.
You probably do. All right, let's close things out for the regular show. And then we can get into some more silliness of the after show. Hopefully you guys are along with some questions, and we'll read off the board to get all caught up there. Big shout out Shasta Chris taking down the Festival of Flight over there in Chiang Mai, Thailand this weekend.
You're just itching to get over there.
I am.
I know.
Lots of international travel, but Shasta's already there. We talked about it. Sounds like he had a really good battle. I think the video said it was his 300th tournament where he picked up this win. So congratulations, Shasta, in an MPO win this weekend over at the Festival of Flight in Chiang Mai. Looking forward to getting out there. Miles Parkhill, Paragon Disc Golf, Miles t-shirts, check them all out. We've got a few links out there. We'll put a few more in the description. For Johnny V, I'm Terry Miller, the Disc Golf Guy. That's been podcast 481. We're going to have an after show. Things might get off the rails. We'll see you then.
More.
When you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.